the point.
Yeah, exactly. What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 58 of Climbing the Ladder. I'm your host, Champman V, and my co-host over here is the soft-spoken Richard Lewis that we all know.
I'll be very soft-spoken today because it's like 1 in the morning here, so
man,
you guys will have to shout to keep me awake.
So actually, the real question is, how many beers have you had like until now?
When I knew we were having such a special guest on, I vowed to stay fucking sober. So.
Well, guys, well, so I wanted to do an episode on just building a brand from a caster standpoint of view, and who better to do it with than, you know, Mr. Artos is over here, Dan Stemkowski. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Kind of early in the morning. I appreciate my European friend here staying up so late to talk to me. And, you know, nothing. It's just this is my morning time. I just ate breakfast, dropped the baby off at her school, and I'm ready to talk to you guys about whatever you have to talk about.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I mean, we don't get a chance to see you talk too much about the business side of casting and all that good stuff. So, I'm pretty excited to get a chance to go through these topics with you.
Yeah.
But why don't we just kick it off? Kind of start things off by talking about the WCS finals. You know, that just happened, and that you casted for. You solo casted actually part of it too, which was.
Yeah,
baller, dude. I can't believe you solo casted that long. That's crazy.
It was hard.
And then, so let's just get your thoughts on that first. Overall experience with WCS and the WCS finals, season one, and any critiques, thoughts, that sort of thing?
I have to say I didn't really care for the way it was done, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just look at it and say this is not the normal production level we have at GOM. And of course, that's because we had to split everything up. And so OSL got that, or OGN got that. I get why, but it wasn't up to the quality standard that I normally like to do. You know, and it's not up to the quality standard that GOM is normally up to. And, you know, it's just, it is what it is. It kind of sucked to solo cast alone a bit. For that long, like one group isn't too bad. It's pretty bad, but it's not too bad. But two groups is pretty tough. I was pretty damn tired that weekend. I didn't do much on Monday, I have to say.
Yeah, so clear up some of this. I mean, there's been some talk about why there was only three of you guys on some of the days, and we're just you solo casting. I mean, was it a budgeting issue or was it scheduling or anything like that?
Yeah, no. This time it was a budgeting issue. Okay. You know, there was only supposed to be solo casters on day one because that's, like, the least important day. Definitely something that I don't think we're going to try again at GOM. I strongly doubt that we'll ever go that route again. Mm-hmm. I think it definitely would have been better to have one strong stream than, you know, a couple of what should have been solo casted streams.
Right.
So, I don't know. It was just a budgeting thing.
Okay, that's cool. You know, it was definitely interesting. It was weird for me, actually, seeing you guys in an empty studio, right? I mean, just I'm so used to you guys being there, immersed in the whole crowd and that sort of experience. You guys and Caldor and Wolf. So
yeah.
The next season is going to be all about that, right? Is the production going to be exactly the same, or is there going to be more of a studio feel to it versus an empty room type of feel?
There's definitely no way that our production is going to be the same level as what we did at the last event. Like and I haven't even talked to them specifically about that, but I think everyone knows that we're going to put together a much better package because we're going to be casting so much. And from what I understand, we're still going to be running all the Challenger League stuff at the GOM studio, so that stuff shouldn't really change. I'm pretty sure about that. Don't quote me. And then for the actual, like, the top level, the Premier League stuff, that's going to be... The players are going to be at the OGN studios. But I think we're going to have, like, a much better production going on. And I'm not sure, but, you know, we actually casted to the studio at this WCS. Because if you look at it logically, right, like, when all the Korean players and live Korean commentaries at the OGN studios during WCS finals, no one's going to show up to listen to Korean commentary at the GOM studios. So they actually just piped us out, and we actually had some fans there, some hardcore guys showed up, and were actually in the audience listening to us. So I don't know if we're going to try something like that for this next season of Premier League, but mm-hmm. I think that that could be a good way to kind of balance it out be like, well, you know, you can go and listen to the Korean commentary and, you know, see the players live and stuff. Or maybe if you want to just listen directly to English commentary, you could go to the Gongsu. But I don't know that we're doing that yet. I'm actually, I got to talk to them and figure that out. But I wouldn't be surprised if we gave it a try. That'd be a
good solution. I mean, just have it on the big screen and just have you guys casting, like a viewing party with, you know, obviously you guys casting to everybody.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to do that during WCS. You know, I feel like that really saved a piece of it because, you know, we didn't have like a lot of fans there. I think a lot of people actually just didn't even know we were doing it, but we gave it a try and it was pretty fun. Like we got to talk with the audience a bit and, you know, normally we're up in like this crow's nest area where we go to commercial and we have 5 minutes and we're like, okay, refill RT. Okay. You know, talk about what just went on the cast and then we're back on. So we never really get to see the fans until the very end of the broadcast, if they stay that long. So this was kind of like a fun way. And I think it could be something that we try again.
Right. Richard, did you get a chance to check out the event this weekend?
I did. I mean, first of all, solo casting is a fucking nightmare, like, no matter how long you've been in the business. And I know everyone was saying, like, what a good job you did, but it's like one of those things, it's like an iceberg, man. Most of it you don't even fucking see. Like, it's real hard work, so grats on that. But nice. I was more interested in like Kaldor's comments.
Yeah, his video, right?
Yeah, I was very interested in all of that. You know, kind of his take on it all, and I agree with what Dan's saying about, you know, how it wasn't. It didn't feel like it didn't feel up to the sort of spectacle that we're kind of used to. But I get there were reasons for that, and it's a shame that. Well, budget enters into the equation. I mean, you would think to something this big.
Just to be clear, Dan was talking about the GOM production, right? In particular,
not necessarily
OGN production.
Specifically about the GOM production. Yeah. The OGN, I actually have no idea. I didn't watch it. So, because I was actually casting literally the entire time.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I didn't catch any of that. All the production problems that I was just talking about were actually on the GOM side. So, because that's what I was there for. I saw what was going on with that, and it wasn't what we normally do, obviously.
Yeah, but anyways, Richard, continue. I just wanted to kind of clarify that.
You can tell I'm fucking tired already, right? I'm missing the fucking point. It's just sailing well over my head. I caught it, and I don't know. Look, I'm not the guy to talk to about WCS, really, because from start to finish, I haven't really been on board with it. It doesn't feel like what StarCraft II deserves, and... I think there's been some very crummy aspects to it, which, you know, if you love the game, you know, you're going to be disappointed with the end product. And I'm looking ahead to the next season where I hope they're going to fix the problems with it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the next season is going to be the next season will definitely be I think major improvements all around. But just my comments on just the OGN production. I mean, I think Kaldor hit it on the mark on a lot of things. And the production, if it wasn't for the two Seans on the couch, it would have been, I mean, everybody would have been like bitching about the production. Those two guys, that couch probably saved the, you know, just that type of a, that type of, not lynching, but, you know, that type of reaction from the community. So he was right on in making that comment, and it was crazy, because you guys were in charge of everything leading up to it, pretty much. So having them, having OGN kind of take the finals there was very, very weird for me. And then just a lot of the little production things, like the overlay, I can't believe the overlay was just the standard Blizzard. Like, it wasn't even the new custom Blizzard, much less GameHard. It was this. It was the most basic thing you could use. I mean, there was basically no overlay from that standpoint. So I was really shocked from that, you know, just from all that. So, you know, definitely a lot of things need to be changed, you know, between even OGN's production, you know. And you guys, I actually didn't have many complaints with what was going on the GOM stream, so... it's kind of interesting to hear that you had you know, a lot of complaints about it. I mean, obviously it was weird, like I said, just seeing you guys in an empty room. But you know, you guys did a great job of casting the game. So I mean, I was watching you guys probably more than I was watching the OGN streams. But yeah, so a lot needs to be changed there, and so this time around they're taking the basically the Premier League season, right? Are you guys going to get the finals then? Is that how it works?
Well, is this like no? Weird? I mean, if you look at the way it was divvied up this year, yeah. We get, because this was all announced in March, right? So we had already run a GSL season, so we have three seasons for WCS total. The whole world does.
Yep.
In this year, and so to divvy that up between the two. OGN gets one season and that season finals that we just had. And then GOM gets two seasons. So after this whole season, and they'll be running the finals at their own thing, it's going to be like a basically an OSL that we will be casting at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we get the last GSL seasons. But for seasonal finals, there's only one in Korea this year, and that one's already gone. So
I
think that answers.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, how do you feel about all that? I mean, because you guys have been at the forefront of Korean StarCraft for a long time now, you know, you and Nick, and you know, what's your honest opinions on that? Because I feel like just not having you guys there for, like, 3 months, like, doing this kind of, more of, I hate to put it this way, but it's more of, like, a side stream kind of thing. That's just weird for me.
Yeah, well, it's a really complicated political type of thing because, I mean, OGN is the big channel that really helped to make StarCraft 1, right? Yeah. I mean, they have supported the esports scene forever. GOM is more of a new player. You know, we've really built up a lot in the StarCraft 2 scene, but how big did StarCraft 2 get in Korea before OGN really started doing it? Not as big as maybe it was expected. So it's politically, it's like really weird. Like, specifically on the English commentary side of it, obviously, like, GOM TV deserves everything in the whole world for that side. But you have to consider the Korean side as well, right? This is Korea, and it's like a funny thing because Korea is the best area, so, you know, we're like the best tournament that everyone wants to watch. So everyone really focuses heavily on that English-speaking side and, like, what the hell, right? Like, shouldn't GOM have everything? But you have to balance in that Korean side where it's like, well, OGN has some absolutely brilliant Korean commentators. You know, they're on Korean television. They built up the industry. Yep. They couldn't just switch over to StarCraft II immediately. There needed to be a transition period for all those. Like, a huge amount of people make their living off of StarCraft in Korea, right? So it was like, it's a more difficult thing than I think most people realize. And, of course, for me, I'm not happy about all that. Like, In a perfectly selfish, Artosis-centered universe, GOM TV gets everything. So, but that isn't the universe that I live in. So, you know, it's hard to say exactly because I see it from all these different angles, and it's not optimal for the English streams, I would say, and I don't think that anyone can argue that. But for the Korean angle, what is the best thing to do? Because we still need to grow it out here. You know, if this is where all the best players are, it's pretty important that it's vibrant in Korea, or suddenly what is going to happen to all these pro gamers when they're mostly paid for by Korean sponsors? We need to get actual Korean views to make sure that these teams stay afloat, to make sure we keep our best players, because if all you have left is Koreans on foreigner teams, StarCraft 2 is going to fall apart really fast, man. It's going to be bad. Everyone's going to have this weird, gross feeling in the pit of their stomach where it's like, yeah, I still like to watch Europeans, but this... not the best, the best of the best aren't playing anymore, you know? So it is important to, like, take all that in consideration, I guess.
Richard,
I don't even remember what your question was now, but, like, I'm glad I got to say that.
Richard, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's the nail on the head, man. Like, I've heard all the arguments about, you know, like, why haven't we got more, you know, kind of English speaking? What, you know, why haven't they moved into that direction? And it's just... it's like you say, people don't look at the bigger picture, and that is if you isolate Korea, you know, from StarCraft, if you actually head in that direction, if you were to take, you know, Korean interest out of it, well, what do we actually have? Like, it wouldn't be a lot at all. You know, it's the lifeblood of the scene, and not just in terms of, you know, players, fan base, all of that nonsense. Actual money, you know, this is what people don't seem to realize, that this game is still propped up largely by the Korean interest, and if that's scaled down, then the whole scene's going to go into, you know, some kind of shrinkage, which nobody wants, because we're at a stage now where we're hoping WCS and that kind of global concern is actually going to allow us to, you know, increase the StarCraft II scene into something a bit more sustainable long term.
We are starting to see growth. I mean, that's kind of one of the main reasons to have this single storyline in multiple regions to kind of grow those non-Korean regions, right? I'm not sure it's working out exactly that way in this first season.
Until they do region locking, you're paying lip service to an idea. And again, I'm convinced they are going to fix that next season. It definitely needs
next year.
I appreciate why they haven't had it in place from the start because, you know, of all the stuff with work permits and, you know, how much time there was to get things set up and whatnot. But obviously it's something we do need to look at moving forward, or we're just going to end up with the one thing which we didn't want, which I'm not even going to vocalize what that is.
Yeah, we talked it to death, man.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I just think in terms of growth, that's definitely the way we need to head, and I think we will see that happen. You know, but yeah, you can't cut the Koreans out of StarCraft. Long story short, and anything that isolates them or perhaps makes them less interested, like if we start focusing on English only streams, that's a bad thing.
I mean, one of the things that we could kind of maybe maybe compare with the other regions, you know, in regards to how the partnerships, I guess, is the other regions aren't having this issue, right? Where there's, I mean, one, because there's not such a you know, two factors, which is, you know, one's just Korean and one's English, you know, type of just partners representing each, right? But the, you know, the MLG is representing America, and IAM is representing EU from this standpoint, right? So it's only one partner that Blizzard's working with in each of those, and I feel like a lot of these issues too would probably not exist if there was only one partner in Korea. And I know it's super complicated. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to make this simple at all. But how much of this do you think will be resolved? I mean, will have to be resolved by some type of, you know, partnership, like a serious partnership with studios and everything between GOM and OGN?
Well, it's so hard to say, right? Because they're two very different companies. One is completely web-based, one is completely TV-based. And that is really, really different. And, I mean, they have a long history of kind of battling each other a little bit. And I don't know exactly how to fix it out here, what's going on with that. Because it does make it a little bit more confusing. It's not as high quality splitting it up like that. It feels like the full heart isn't necessarily in it for the whole scene. Because it's like, well, now we're switching formats for the next Premier League season. And we're switching studios. And it's going to be a completely different feel. The thing is, we need to make sure that we have enough tournaments out here and enough interest on TV and on the internet with Koreans, because, again, I want to, like, double underline this for people. Like, you can see the health of where StarCraft, I think, is at by the KESPA teams. The KESPA teams are the most important things in StarCraft 2. Like, some of this other stuff's really important, too, right? Like, some of the foreign teams, like EG and whatnot, are important, but the basis of StarCraft skill comes out of KESPA. Like, that is, it's so important, and that needs a lot of TV viewers. So going the one partner route can be, like, how do you do that? Again, in a perfect Artosis-centered universe, GOM is the only partner, and we do everything inside the studio, and everything looks better that I'm casting. But we need to make sure that just Korea overall, and how do you make sure that the Korea views are good? Because we're going to get a lot of English-speaking views. These are the best players people are going to watch. That's the way it's going to be. Like, the production might look a little bit different than a normal CODES season this season, but I still think, you know, a lot of people are going to tune in. I think we're actually going to get very similar numbers to the other seasons, watching, like, myself and Nick in that Premier League, and then, you know, we're going to be doing all the Code A stuff, type stuff, Challenger League stuff at GOM too. So, I mean, the English views still should be really high. Like, they still should be normal. The games are still going to be fantastic. They're still the best games you can find. As much as I love watching these other leagues, they are not going to measure up to what you're going to see here. So, I don't know about the single partner. I don't know how that would be done. Like, who would you choose? And then, both organizations have sway with a huge faction of pro gamers. It's like,
yeah,
it's just so deeply political over here.
Yeah, and it's kind of too bad, because if there was, you know, if they did combine, or this is just hypothetically speaking, one of them bought the other, or just some crazy thing like that, it would just be so straight, you know, I think everything would be so straightforward. And you're right, Korea is like, it is kind of the center of StarCraft II right now, whether we like it or not, honestly, but it is. So, yeah, hopefully something will be figured out, because I just don't love the product right now. I don't love seeing, I'm going to just be straightforward, I don't love seeing you and Nick not casting the final, like the events, you know, or the final matches and stuff. Because you know, it's all about bringing the best of the best, doing the most important events. So, you know, I don't love that at all. So having to compromise on that is, for us, even as fans and viewers, I feel like is not a great thing, you know. So, yeah, I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out. It's nothing that we can really do, honestly. Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk about casting, just your thoughts on casting today versus like 2 years ago. And do you think, for yourself, casting, how is it different for you, like, now than before? Because you know, I watched you guys 2 years ago, and and I myself have noticed the difference between you casting now. I mean, now you're definitely more, you know, refined and more professional, but I have to say that you don't have that kind of wide-eyedness that you used to have before, which, you know, was entertaining in its own right too. So kind of want to get your thoughts on it.
What do you mean by the wide-eyedness? Like,
you know, like, I think every time I used to watch you, like, in season one and two and stuff, it'd be like, or every you know, every match, it was just, you know, it's kind of like when you see things for the first time. Like, even you guys, you know, casting, it's there's just that sense of, you know, super excitement, like, every moment of the season, honestly. And, you know, because you've seen so many matches now, you know what I mean? You've seen all the best players for, you know, years now, so, I can't, you know, it's pretty natural, you know, to not have that same thing.
Well, I mean, I guess that has to happen. I think it actually makes a better product, because, like, about 5 minutes in the game, I already know what the entire game probably will look like, and, like, all the branches, like, form in my mind, and, you know, I think that actually makes it a little bit better. Like, back in the day, you'd be seeing things, I'm like, oh my god, you can do that? Right. Like, what the hell? But it's good to know everything that can be done, because nowadays the product is so much more refined, what we're saying, and like, the analysis is much better, and just the flow of it all, like, we know when to shut up because action's about to start, whereas back in the day, it's like, any moment anything can happen because no one knows what the hell is going on. So I totally get what you're saying there, but still there are sometimes some new stuff that I actually, like, get insane chills over, because I'm like, you just showed me something I didn't know or didn't see or didn't think of, which is hard because all I do is StarCraft, you know? So there's still, like, pieces of that, but of course it's not going to be as much as before. But, like, compared to the old days, I guess, you know, the whole landscape of how to cast has changed. You know, we've really gotten kind of a formula down as to, like, what looks good. And back then it was just completely freeform for everyone, you know? Like, everyone was trying to figure out what is the best way to do it and what is going to get views and what are people going to like. And we definitely went through, like, a lot of, Nick and I went through a lot of different changes with our commentary. And, like, we've toned up jokes, toned up analysis, toned down, up, down on everything, right? Like, we've basically fiddled with all the knobs and try to find the best place to be at.
How do you analyze? Do you guys actually watch y'all's broadcasts at the end of every broadcast, or?
Well, we've watched a lot of it. We ask people that we respect for their opinions. We definitely, the biggest way is that we talk about it. Like, we'll go on, especially when we started. Like, when we started and we're casting like 5 or 6 days a week at GOM, every time we went off camera, all we did until we went back on camera was talk about what just happened. And we analyze every little piece. Like, we're becoming real, or we've become really perfectionist on this, where we'll actually go over, like, every word sometimes. Oh, wow. I'll be like, nice. Oh, this sentence, like, what was this? Or you know, and especially back then, it was we did it a little bit more because we didn't have it kind of down. Nowadays, there's a lot of times where we're like, we just look at each other, we're like, good job, that was good, really liked it, like the energy, let's keep it up. But there have been a lot of times where I might be like, ooh, I or Nick will say, Dan, I don't think you used this word quite right. I think that this is more of a negative connotation. You were meaning it for a positive way or something. And, you know, it's a huge, like, process over, you know, it's like we've just casted more than everyone. So we've gotten mm-hmm. to do this over and over, and we're really hyper, hyper self-critical. And we both can take criticism from each other completely well because we're, like, actually best friends and we're really professional about it. So I guess that's how we kind of honed in on everything. Like, yeah, I can literally be like, Nick, you're sucking today. You got to fix this, this, and this. You'd be like, I am sorry. I'm going to fix this, this, and this. And, of course, he'll do the same for me as well.
Yeah, I do that to Richard all the time, man. but that's awesome having a partner to do that because, you know, a lot of casters right now don't have that counterpart that you can – you know, literally work with them like that. You'll have this understanding and can just, after each broadcast, can actually improve yourself. So that's pretty awesome.
I think that's been the best thing, like, in terms of watching the development of StarCraft 2 casting, because, like, what I hated when everyone realized StarCraft 2 was going to be a money spinner, suddenly we had this, like, glut of wannabe casters, right? Like, and obviously you had people who, you know, I mean, like, everyone suddenly was, oh yeah, I fucking love Brood War. You never heard them talk about StarCraft, like, at the time. No one mentioned it. Like, and then there was these guys trying to get in on the gravy train. I mean, one of the reasons why, you know, I respected, like, people like Dan and all that was their pedigree was there. You know, like, you fucking knew these guys were hardcore StarCraft fans. Like,
there was players.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Former players. But I mean, like, you know, they give a shit, right? Like, you know, whatever. Don't judge them on their achievements. Judge them on longevity. Judge them on activity. That's how you judge people, right? You know, and so at the start of StarCraft 2, you had all these, like, everyone wanted to be a fucking StarCraft 2 caster. And we actually had a lot of lousy ones, and even the guys who've gone on to be good ones were kind of, you know, lousy because, as you rightly point out, no one really knew what the fuck was going to happen, you know, in the competitive games. We were watching it, like, and as you say, you know, sometimes be taken aback because, like, holy shit, I didn't even know we could do that yet. So what's been great is over that cup, you know, that 2 year period, first of all, we weeded out the wannabes. They've moved on to, like, League of Legends, you know, whatever's popular now, right? And they've left StarCraft 2 well behind and left it for the good guys.
Hold on, right? I gotta watch the stream chat for shots fired. I know that's coming up right now. No, go ahead.
I say it all. I say shit all the time. People shit on me. They hate me. I'm here to be that guy. So, but I'm saying that, and it's the truth. But the guys who stay behind have developed their real, if you like, rapport with the community. They've honed their repertoire, and you can see just how good they are. I mean, like, I would say out of all the casters we've got, like, right now across every game, it's the StarCraft 2 guys that probably get closest to being ESPN quality, you
or
know?
Or better.
Yeah, or better, exactly. I mean, they work so fucking hard at it. And the best thing as well, I love seeing you guys break into StarCraft 2, you know, guys like Kalaris and guys like that. Because if you wanted to start being a StarCraft 2 caster now, shit, man, you really must want it. Because guys like Dan and all that at the top have got it fucking, you know, sewn up. You know, who's going to want to pick the new guy? And guys like James getting a job at ESL, I mean, that's like a huge success story in what is a very competitive industry and a very difficult industry to break into. So for me, I think it's been watching the guys hone their craft and become top-level pros. I mean, like, you know, I could imagine a guy like Dan, or, you know, I had Apollo on my show yesterday. You know, I could imagine them on TV commentating a football match. You know, like, they're that good. And we've got rid of all the guys that really didn't understand the game and couldn't do actual commentary. Commentary isn't just running a play-by-play narrative of what's happening on the screen. Commentary is adding a context and an analysis that you can't get anywhere else.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the actual sports analysts and sports productions, they actually have an army of people that are kind of providing the same thing that, like, two guys do in our productions. So
exactly,
it's, you know, that I think that's what makes it even more impressive. But Dan, so, like, what do you need to improve on? Like, as a caster, what do you yourself think that you could improve on?
Oh, I've got a long list of that. Oh my god, I'm always trying to improve. But, like, for instance, me personally, sometimes I overuse phrases or words. Everyone does that. And yeah. One of my biggest challenges is catching myself before the community does, which I've actually become pretty damn good at. They used to, like, be like, you say this too much. I'm like, oh, my God, I do. And they do that with, like, several words, like, weeks after weeks. But that's, like, one thing I really try to stay on top of. Got to open up the thesaurus.com and figure out, you know, different ways to say things. I oftentimes make up words. Like, I want to say something, and I have the words that I want, and I try to, like, turn them into adjectives or something, and then I just kind of laugh because I'm like... This, I mean,
dude, that's awesome, though. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm sure there's some sort of charm to it, but is that truly great commentary? I can't say that it necessarily is. You know, there's definitely times where I stumble when I'm speaking, especially when I'm getting like really, really excited. I sometimes do stumble over words, and I've gotten pretty good at saving myself, but my words don't always come out perfectly in that regard. Let's
okay.
see.
Well, I mean, I'm not. Oh, gonna...
I mean, there's a lot.
I'm not
going to
give
a
list of all
out,
but
like,
yeah. Okay, awesome. So, what would you say to? I mean, you know, Richard made a really good point about being a caster these days is pretty damn hard because honestly, yeah. I don't think there's enough jobs like really our gigs out there right now for.
Yeah.
And kind of the trend of the industry is really for organizations to hire casters, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you guys obviously with GOM. And like Axel and Axlab with MLG, and at the time NASL, right, had all the NASL has their group of guys, and so on and so on, right? What do you like? Would you encourage people to cast? I mean, actually pursue casting these days? No, I mean,
well,
seriously, it's
you can try, but like
you can
I
do
feel
anything
like
you want
the casters that can be hired at an event. Like, we haven't had anyone that gets regularly hired at an event since Kolaris. He was the last guy in that actually regularly gets events. And that's because, like, at this point, all of us have so much practice. And practice makes perfect, man. Like, the more that you stay there and people don't crucify you out of the scene, it gets harder and harder and harder because all of us are getting so much practice all the time, working on it all the time. And everyone's, like, working their asses off, right? So... there's very little room left, but there is, like, you can still see people rising up. Like Nathanius is doing, he's doing this next DreamHack. He got
amazing,
a break and
yeah.
He worked hard and he tried and here he is. He's going to get a break and we'll see if it works out for him. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. We've seen other people get breaks. Like you see Jorasar hitting events every now and then,
yep.
Right? Like these are not the top end, top name casters, but they are at least working hard enough to get a shot somewhere. So the thing is, it matters how badly you want it. You have to want something so bad in esports to actually achieve it. And if you don't want it that bad, well, I mean, you can do it in your free time. Maybe, you know, you have like 50, 100 viewers or something on your YouTube videos and you're like, yeah, no, that's cool. I just enjoy to do it. That's great. But if you're trying to make this into a career, that is going to be ridiculously difficult. And at this point, like, after I kind of noticed maybe about a year ago that we weren't going to have anyone really new consistently getting events,
yeah.
And I figured, you know what, and here's the thing, pros are going to start retiring and becoming casters.
That's what
so this
saying.
Is probably it for non-pros. Like, if you want to be a caster, it might even be easier to become a pro first so you have credibility and then become a caster, which is insane, but there's, like, no casting spots, especially now that WCS is out, there's, like, just less events overall, it feels like. So there's, like, it's the way it is. And I think that almost all the upcoming casters from now on are going to be those ex-pros.
Well, I mean, one thing about ex-pros that isn't a given, their knowledge is obviously a given, but they're not necessarily good play-by-play guys, right? So from the standpoint of play-by-play, I think there's still some opportunity. Obviously, there's a lot of good play-by-play guys right now. But, you know, we always talk about players and, you know, we're always missing these segments under professional gaming right now. Well, casters are missing the same thing, too. We need more smaller tournaments so we can get, you know, some of these up-and-coming casters, too. You know, some
I think the thing
practices,
with the casting at the moment, though, Chris, is like, right, what you need to, when you're coming into casting is you've got to bring something new to the table. And, you know, with guys like Dan and, you know, all the other names that we know about, you know, have been there for such a long time, established. Yeah. The community love them. It's what they want. They cry out for them to be at every event. They are almost at every event. You can divide it, you know, between them. The guys who are coming up now take their cues from them. They emulate them. Yep. So why would I want some new guy who's a knockoff of Artosis when I can have Artosis?
That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem you've got right now. So I'd say, as well as anything else, if you're a new and upcoming caster, at least have a fucking style. You know, I mean, I hear guys who sound, you know, new guys coming up now, you sound just like, you have to do a double take. You're like, is that Mr. Bitter, is that? Yeah, and it isn't, right? It's just some new dude. So, you know, I think that's another vital thing. You've got to bring your own shit, like, be it good or bad, to the table, and let the community decide if that, they want more of that, you know? Yeah. It doesn't happen enough. But I, to be honest, I think the last thing StarCraft II needs now is more casters. There's definitely lots of fucking job opportunities where we could actually use good esports people. Casting probably isn't one of them. I think StarCraft 2's got an embarrassment of riches in that department.
Right. All right, straight up, Dan. Casters, yeah, overpaid right now?
No.
Before?
No. What?
Before?
No. Okay. No. Right. Jesus, this is... people don't actually understand how hard casting is. Like,
oh, yeah.
And I don't think that they can until they've done 14 hours at an MLG and then slept for 5 and then come back and done 14 more and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
It is so hard. You have to be on, like, there's no way. We're at this point, like, the amount of views that we get on some of these streams, there is no possibility anyone could ever convince me casters are overpaid. And in fact, I would say in most cases they are underpaid. Like, it is a hard job. You are the one bringing the storyline. You have to know your shit. The amount of time that I put into StarCraft is more than anyone works on, like, a normal job, right? Like, you think I only put 40 hours a week into making sure I know my shit for StarCraft? Oh, no. I'm far more than that. And, you know, 15 years as well of that, too, to even start getting paid. So, definitely not.
Richard, definitely not, I know you've had opposite opinions of this, so...
Yeah, it's right. I'm not saying it right. You cannot make a generalization, and I know I love to fucking talk in generalizations. That's my whole career in a fucking nutshell, right? People are saying this, I'm going to say the other thing, and, you know, and just have at it, guys. But the reality is, you know, no one would begrudge, like, if Dan was to fucking lay it bare now and say, like, you know, I'm coining it in, boys, like, but I fucking worked for it and I earned it. You'd have to be a real piece of shit to begrudge him that money. You know, like, serious. But equally, you know, there's other casters that don't work anywhere near as hard. And that's where I think we start getting into the gray area. You know, I talk to a lot of players when I'm at events doing my interviews and whatnot. And, you know, when we have a few beers and kick back afterwards, there is, like, amongst some of them, an almost prevailing resentment. You know, that it's like, on the one hand, yeah, we put in way more hours than so-and-so does to be a caster, to be a player. And we finish out of the top 8 and we get fuck all money. I know they're flying, you know, first class. We're flying budget, you know. So, you know, there is that there. And not only that as well, you know, now you've got this thing, as you were talking about, Dan, where players are getting resentful of players who weren't even good enough to get 32. And now they're going to be casters, right? Like, and they're going to make more money off doing that than they ever would have seen as a competitor. So, you know, I can kind of sympathize with that a little bit. You know, I really can't.
This is actually a mindset that I see pop up every now and then. That is such the wrong way to look at things, because players may be underpaid. That does not mean that casters are overpaid. Right, that is right. Not. Those do not, there is actually no correlation there, okay? That has nothing to do with each other. That, like, they are such different worlds. Whenever I see anyone complain about that, I'm like, dude, what do you want me to tell you? Go be a caster then. There is problems with what some players are paid. Absolutely, that is true. A lot of players are underpaid, yes. That doesn't mean that casters are overpaid. That is, no, like, and that, that, The worst fallacy I've ever heard.
Yeah, no. I totally agree with that. But equally as well, there's some problems that face players that will never face a caster. You know, I cover a lot of stories when I'm doing, you know, my journalistic stuff, you know, doing whistleblowing on leagues that don't pay prize money in a timely fashion, right? Mm-hmm. So players are getting shafted, you know, or organizations that promise them a salary and then, you know, fuck them over. You know, like I broke the story about MTW and their nonsense. So, I've never heard of a caster not getting his paycheck. Well, once, actually.
Oh, that happens.
No, that happens.
Sorry. There's been events that have not paid me.
Why isn't that coming out then? You know, because again, that would actually help the perception, right? And again, I'm talking about it from the player perspective. Players look at what casters have, and I'd say they're envious. And I don't think that's a good thing for any competitive.
Right? No, I get it. I understand why some players get envious and upset about how much a caster makes or something. But the answer isn't to say, well, they should get paid less because we're not doing well. No, that is the worst thing. That sets the whole industry back. You guys should get paid more.
Yeah.
And the thing is, who should get paid more? It's actually really hard when I actually start asking the questions of some people when sometimes I have like a lot of pro gamer friends and to ask, be like, well, who is it that's drastically underpaid? And well, for the most part, it's actually Korean players because they're much better. So what are we basing what you're paid like as a player, right? Like, and that's like a whole other box of worms.
I got to be honest, dude. Like, I mean, that is a huge, when I saw how, like, I presume, man, the Korean players would be living in a utopia, you know, money, bitches, the dream, right? And then I saw my first Korean gaming house with like 12 dirty mattresses on the floor and stuff, and I was like, what is going on here? Like, this is. Yeah. This is crazy. So you're right, man. I mean, and you know, I'm just kicking the hornet's nest to see what flies out, right? I haven't got strong feelings either way. I know how hard you work. I know how hard Apollo works. I wouldn't begrudge them a penny, no matter what it was, no matter what amount it was, because I'm a great believer in you work hard, you earn. You know, you can sleep easy knowing you've earned your money. But there's definitely some other problems, and within the industry. And I think maybe, and this is the one thing I would say, some casters turn a blind eye to those problems and aren't as vocal about them as maybe they could be to help speed things along. Like, I'd like to see casters that are really prominent in the scene use their influence to maybe start to get people to fix these problems. Like, for example, if you know a league hasn't paid out their prize money in a timely fashion, say, we're not casting your event until you pay out that prize money. And, you know, that would be a way, I think, that, you know, everyone could kind of work together to really progress, you know, some of the problems we have in StarCraft 2 right now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, there has been a lot of talk about, like, I hear mutterings every now and then about things like unions and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and, like, yep. using a block of either casters or players and casters. But, I mean, I don't know if we're exactly there yet. I've heard the murmurings, but I, you know, right now we're in this weird transitional period in StarCraft 2 where, you know, last year it was all about, I don't know the right word, like maybe capitalism or something. Everyone just battled everyone and, you know, just the best rose to the top, just, the worst were falling off.
Yeah.
And this year we have this weird, like, Blizzard came in and flattened everything out and... So it's like, I don't know that right this second is the best time for something like that. I mean, there definitely have to be improvements all around. And a lot of those would be definitely with players as well.
Well, you know, what's funny is because, like, we're talking about, like, players should be paid more. And you're talking about, you know, they should be paid based on skill. And...
Well, no. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, should they be paid based on skill? I think I posed more of a question like, would you base that off of? Because actually, a personality is very important. Because you can have a ridiculously good player, but if he's a robot in front of the camera, no one relates to him. And he doesn't have as many fans as someone else, like MC, for instance, right? Like, he's a bad example because he's so fucking good,
he's
too.
He's good,
but,
too. So
there are players out there that just have a personality but aren't as good, who might actually be worth more because this is entertainment as well. This isn't about winning enough prize money to stay alive. This is about more than that. You have to, you know, be a personality, and through being a personality and being good, that's how you... It's hard because it isn't mapped out yet. Like, no one's done it perfectly.
It's about it's exactly about entertainment. And how you define entertainment is, you know, like in other sports, this is where I kind of have this view of one thing that we need to improve as an esport is the production side of it. Because I think it's not as entertaining to see, like, some of the top level players win sometimes, or just in general, because our game is something that's very hard to, it's hard to demonstrate why they're so amazing and why they're so much better than you at home, because you don't actually physically get to see them controlling, you know, the actual units, you know, like they're, you know, you get that frame of them sitting there with the keyboard and mouse moving super fast and controlling the units at the same time. You can only see like what's on the board, and actually what's on the screen isn't even necessarily what's going on in the entire game too, because there's a lot of macro actions that are going on that you don't even get to see. So that's actually a problem we have with you know, just our sport, is that we haven't figured out how to show how impressive these players are yet.
Yeah.
And I think if we can, then some of these guys that we say have no personality can still be entertaining, you know, they can, you know, we can help grow the whole thing even
better. Well, that's a big job of the commentator too.
Yeah,
I feel,
exactly. That's why you guys deserve to make like the money you make, is because you facilitate that bridge or that role that's missing.
Well,
right.
Yeah,
now,
it's, you know? It's really important that commentators, like a big tip to commentators out there, you have to make or help make the players into stars, right? Like you need to actually tell this player's story. You need to do your homework and know why Sase is so fucking interesting and how he moves out into Asia all the time for better practice and sacrifices tournaments and money to do so and stuff. And it's like, you need to know why it's really interesting that, you know, who Grubby is and what he did before and how long it took him to get back up to skill. And like, these are like such important stories, and you need to have casters doing this. It's not just about the way that they're playing in the game, but that's also important too. You have to, as a caster, be able to be like, this is why this is amazing. This is why I am so impressed, and you should be too. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when I hear you talk about like innovation, for instance, right? And, you know, obviously you're explaining, oh, man, he's dropping everywhere at the same time while he's still maintaining his macro at home. You know, like he's not missing any steps at home. You know, just even those kind of explanations right there, you know, kind of at least put us in perspective, put the perspective to the viewers that, oh, man, I can't do that. It's like, no way in hell I could do that. So that's why this guy is such a superstar, you know? But,
I think as well, though. I mean, like, it's a very weird part of the industry. Like, I'm a purist. Like, I want the money to be on a meritocracy in terms of skill and ability. I think that's more, you know, we kind of see that. It's more in line with what you see in other sports, I guess. You know,
But it's just what's entertaining. I mean, you can't get away from the fact that it's just what's entertaining. In other sports, when I watch LeBron James go and freaking tomahawk dunk the ball, I know I can't do that, so that's why it's entertaining to me, you know, to see
that. Yeah, but itself is about talent, not necessarily just entertaining.
But it's
something very unique to esports. Yeah. Like, I've been a manager of an organization, you know, Dan's done that as well.
Yeah.
And when sponsors were talking to me, I'd be like, so, you know, where do you want us to finish? What do you want us to achieve? And they'd be like, give a fuck, just tell us about the numbers. You know, I don't care if you finish last, right? Like, it was just literally, you know, go out there and just make sure everyone sees. Even if you fail, make sure everyone sees it, right? And that was their priority. I don't know if it was different for you.
Okay, keep going. Sorry, Richard.
No, I was just gonna say, like, so I just think when it comes to esports as a whole, it's one of the things that it's a unique problem that we overvalue it, maybe, you know, the entertainment aspects of it, rather than just purely going on the meritocracy
so
of who's the better player.
I disagree with that, because I guess preface my point I'm about to make. Just look at the streams today. Like, you know, I was talking to Monk or just the TL guys about the featured stream recently, and, you know, some of the things I was talking to them about, you know, one of the things that came up was just, you know, super good players, Korean players like Jaedong, or just a lot of those players that stream nowadays. And it's like, why don't those guys get 15,000-20,000 people watching them based on their merit, right? I mean, just based on how good they are, right? And it's because that today's stream, like maybe about a year or two ago, they would have, but today's StarCraft 2 community, we're not entertained that much anymore just by watching some guy play a game. You know, just watching like a no cam game being played and with no commentary, right? So what we deem as entertainment these days is like much different, right? So and again, like it has a lot to do with what I was just the point I was making before, just the impressiveness of it. Like when you can't see the guy, you know, when we're just watching the game being played, that just doesn't do anything for us now. And I think maybe we've been spoiled by some of these streams that do have commentary. That like Idra, for instance, right? He never used to commentate. He used to just play, right? And everybody would watch him. Like 10,000 people would watch him. But nowadays,
they weren't watching him for what he did. They were watching him for his reaction to what he was doing, his rage and stuff.
No, not necessarily.
That was definitely a big part of it.
You think so?
That is definitely a big part of it. It can't just be, you can't just say it was because of his skill. It was a combination of an interesting story, a good skill, and like the rage that everyone wants to see.
Yeah. Okay,
you know?
Okay, I give you that. That's true. But anyway,
there's a lot of
factors
for any of these streams and their numbers.
Yeah, and this is why, you know, I think it is a shame. I totally get why for a stream it helps if you're entertaining, but you know, I know for an organization to prop up an average player with a lot of money and to give them a career that many people are envious of when we know they're ultimately a mediocre talent, it's a dangerous precedent to kind of set in any industry that wants to be about competition. And that, you know, I've always been a little bit wary about that kind of direction that we've moved in within esports, that, you know, we're definitely becoming a slave to the numbers. Like, what's popular is what's good, and we're not even going to fucking discuss or debate that anymore. It just, that's what you're stuck with in esports, yeah?
Right. Well, okay, guys, well, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll get to branding, like, right after the break, and kind of get to the theme of this show, but kind of hard not to talk with Dan about all these interesting issues. But all right, we'll be right back, guys. So here's some music for you guys.
Thank you.
All right. We are back from break. Hopefully you guys enjoyed one of these rare climbing the ladder breaks. But I promise we're going to do them more often, like from here on out. So
he always took a break so he could tell me to shut the fuck up. You're disagreeing with me on my show.
Oh, please. How man. Dare Everybody you like disagreed that. On my, with that, me on
that's
my show.
That's what happened off air, guys. He's a fucking bully, this Chris Chan.
That's he is. He was being mean to me. It was really weird.
Oh, my God.
Such a control freak.
That's funny. I'm a control freak. All right, so let's get to the theme of the show, which is building a brand as a caster, a successful caster, is actually the official title. So I want to kind of talk to you about that because I feel like, you know, a few brands have kind of, I guess, spun off of, that you're related to, and first off being Artosis, obviously your name, and then Tastosis, the casting archon, right? And, yep. The handsome nerd, right? So talk to me a little about Artosis. I know you just kind of told me, but you didn't tell Richard. Right. So how did you come up with the name Artosis?
I've said it a few times vocally, but here's exactly what it was. I was an arrogant little kid. At video games, I just thought I was like the greatest video game player ever when I was, you know, a young teenager and stuff. And I guess it was year 2000. I was playing a lot of StarCraft, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to become famous at this. And it wasn't like a quest for fame. I'm just like, I'm going to play this so much. I'm going to be so good. People are going to know my name and be like, oh, that guy is really good. Like, because I was just like intrigued that there was such a hard video game that I could play on the internet. So I was like, all right, I need to have my own ID, which this is like the beginning of branding for me, where I'm like, I have to have a completely an ID nobody has, because you see people with like, I'm like, oh, which hero are you talking about, right? That's terrible branding. Whereas if you have a completely made up word, then I guess that's good, because I have like /Artosis on everything, Twitter, Facebook, you know, everything. It's just that's because I made the word up. So I sat there and I'm like, I need my own ID because I want there never to be a mistake when people are talking about me, because I was such an arrogant little StarCraft 1 player. So my first ID, because I was playing Diablo before, so my BattleNet ID that I was using on StarCraft, because I just used them, but I'm like, oh, wow. So I took the AR and the Tosis, and I'm like, Artosis, and I type it in and like, it doesn't exist. So I think that was the year 2000 I did that, and bam, Artosis was born, and I never switched it.
Wait, stream's offline?
Yeah, I think the stream just went down just as you were about to do the reveal.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I didn't even... It wasn't... Well, it must have been Twitch, actually. It wasn't me. Okay, what... Oh, man, what part did we miss?
Brilliant.
All right, where did we end?
I have no idea, honestly. I didn't even know we went out.
You got up to the corn song, and then it went down.
Okay, so my friend that I asked, like, if he had any IDs or any ideas for any IDs that I could use, brought up Cameltosis, a song that I hate, by the way. It's a terrible song. So I, like, took the AR from Archmage, and I took the Tosis, and I was like, oh, my God, that sounds really cool. Artosis, wow, what is this? So I looked it up. It doesn't exist, the word. So, bam, that was my ID, and I never, ever changed it because I know the value in keeping your ID the same, unlike many, many other people.
Many other Koreans. Yes. They change their names all the time. It's like,
all the time.
Why? Why?
That's the
doing
exact
this?
Example of how not to brand.
Exactly. So with Tastosis, I hate to kind of go back to back with how it came. Who came up with it, but who did come up with the term Tastosis?
Okay. So, if I recall this completely correctly, Nick and I started casting more and more together, because we were the two biggest casters in StarCraft 1. Obviously, we both moved to Korea, and we started doing a little bit more together. We actually worked at rival companies. Mm-hmm. I worked at IEG, which now does the Pro League, and he worked at GOM TV back then in Ireland. So,
right.
We were actually at rival companies and weren't able to cast together. But people loved both of our casts. We were considered the top two easily, and everyone loved our stuff. So we actually were doing some stuff for Lipton of Starfeeder, a good friend. And I forget what league we were doing or cast we were doing. And he actually, I think what he said was we were like, I think he called us the casting archon. or something like that. It was something very close to that, or it was specifically the casting Archon. And we were like, oh, that's kind of cool, because we're like two Templars that are merging. So then Nick and I sat in my apartment, and we just like, we're like, this is really kind of neat. We should keep this. And like, then we just brainstormed how to put our names together and came up with Tastosis. And we're like, oh, that sounds cool too. It almost sounds like a breakfast cereal, but it's a little bit cooler than that. So that's how Tastosis was born. And then it was just like a way to label it when we were both casting together. Because, like, I mean, Tastosis and Artosis has a good ring to it, but, like, we wanted to have another word for that as well, so that we'd have our own brands, and then we'd have, like, a together, like, oh, you know this is going to be good, because the two best StarCraft casters are casting it in that in StarCraft 1, so we called it Tastosis.
Okay, and you know, once you guys had that, right, I mean, how much did that brand actually help you guys?
A lot. I mean, that's... you can easily see that any duo that casts together at all, the first thing that happens when people are either threads pop up and people try to figure out Archon names for casters, yeah. Like it's helped us so much because we are like the original by years and years on that, and it's really nice. We're referred to that as that all the time, which is great because we are different alone than we are together. Together we are like our full power, the Archon Tastosis, right? And it's like it's an easy way to, like, for instance, this last DreamHack I went to, right, it was Artosis is going to this DreamHack.
Yep.
Whereas it, that's different from saying Tastosis is going, because that's like an easy way to package it, and it's like excitement. It's like we're both going, that's it, we're going to see us cast together and it's going to be great. Whereas, you know, this single brand is a different type of thing.
Yeah, so when it comes to brands like this, like Tastosis, for instance, have you done anything with the brand outside of just having it be, you know, an identifier for you guys? Like, have you made any merch with that? Like, I don't think I've seen merch with Tastosis on it. Has there been?
I think we had, like, some shirts at thehandsomenerd.com and stuff, but I'm not sure exactly. Like, when we were starting to get a little bit more heavily into that stuff, the casting really picked up, so we got a little bit behind. I'm sure we would have had more by now, but, you know, it's just we're busy. Yeah. Or we have been busy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of – the reason I asked that is just kind of more to see, like, what other intrinsic values come from just having this brand, right, outside of just like the community, you know, recognizing you based on that name. Because, you know, even though it is great and it's kind of witty and it's unique in that sense – I mean, you guys still, it wouldn't be that crazy for me to just hear Tasteless and Artosis all the time.
No,
right?
It's certainly, I mean, they're both usable, definitely. But do we get a bit of an advantage having Tastosis being, I mean, Tasteless and Artosis are very household for esports, right? Like, people know it, but they also know Tastosis. So now we have, whenever you hear any three of those words, you think of both of us, right?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
You don't think of Tasteless without Artosis or Artosis without Tasteless. Tastosis, obviously, you think of both of us. Whereas you think of anyone else, like, there's nothing like that for Day 9. You hear Day 9, you think of Day 9. But there's no Archon name or no partner caster name that automatically jots your memory to that. So we actually, we cheat. We have three words that
three
automatically
keywords.
Make you think of us.
Three keywords that show up, like, when you Google it, right?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Those are like the tags on our YouTube video or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, last brand I have here is the Handsome Nerd, right? Or handsomenerd.com, but I think it's just the Handsome Nerd, right? Talk to me about that brand, because that's obviously something separate that you guys came up with. Did you guys come up with that with EMG, or was that just y'all's?
Oh, no, that was
just all
was
you guys,
5 years ago.
Yeah, this is all you guys. Yeah.
5 years ago, you know, Nick and I were living in Korea. We were both just chilling, hanging out all the time, being good friends. And I was like, you know what? Let me look into this. I thought that because there was no good gaming shirts or anything. Mm-hmm. So I go to Nick. I'm like, look, I think we should make a t-shirt company because I'm so embarrassed by the... We talked about it. We came to the conclusion that all these gaming shirts that you see, like, from Hot Topic and shit like that, it's so bad. Like, oh, wow, a Nintendo control on your shirt. Wow, a cool shirt, bro. Who thought of this one? Like, you know, it's... there were a lot of embarrassing, like, you are here just to make money in my space, and like, people are buying it because there's nothing else. Whereas we're like, we want actual stylish ones, because, you know, at that point, we were living in Korea, and Nick was actually very stylish. Like, he was up to date on, like, Korean styles and stuff, and, you know, I was a nerd that needed to wear good shirts. So that's, we kind of just, we thought to make that, and then Nick is the best human in the whole world at coming up with names, and he came up with the Handsome Nerd, and we were like, oh, that's perfect, because we decided back then to take back the word nerd, because, like, nowadays, everyone calls everyone a nerd in StarCraft, and it's a positive connotation, and that's, we wanted to do that, because it's stupid that, like, anyone would ever be called a nerd and not feel good about that. So now it's like, I literally greet all of my friends, like, if someone calls me, I actually answer the phone, and I'm like,
what's up, my nerd,
you know, like, yeah, and it's, that's a word that we want to take back, and to be, like, the handsome nerd. It's like, yeah, man, because you're a handsome nerd, that's it, like, it's... I think it, like, really, the name perfectly fulfills what we're trying to do, where just be proud of who you are, and, you know, this is, I love gaming, man, and I wear gaming shirts every damn day. Like, no, I don't know if I have any shirts that are
gaming
shirts.
It's a brilliant brand, actually. Richard, what do you think of Handsome Nerd?
I like it, and I gotta be honest as well, there's definitely a big market for sort of that kind of thing, gaming t-shirts and whatnot. But it's like you say, one of the things that we kind of circumnavigated around while we were talking about brands is, you know, obviously a brand has to stand for something. It can't just be a clever, I mean, that's what a brand is. A brand can't just be a phrase, you know, there's got to be some sort of association with what that brand is for. And that's why, you know, people talk about brand strength. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there has to be some associative quality. So, you know, for example, the Handsome Nerd, you know, T-shirt range, you know, I think the title, you know what you're going to get from a Handsome Nerd T-shirt, because there's that kind of playfulness already in what it's called. Mm-hmm. My company that I work for, just to get a shameless plug in, we got our own T-shirts. It's actually probably not as cool because it's called Fragware. Obviously, it's FPS focused. So yeah, Handsome Nerd's probably is the better title. So well done, Dan.
Oh, that's all tastes, man. I literally cannot think of anything clever as far as names go. But
yeah, you know. So I think you know, one of the things that we definitely should be talking about, I'll give Chris the nudge, is kind of, you know, when you create a brand, you then have to have an idea. A brand starts out as a name. You need to have an idea about what that brand's going to mean, you know, what the meaning of that brand's going to be as you move forward. So, you know, with the, you know, Artosis name, it's interesting that you talk about kind of transitioning from being a player to being a caster, because I imagine the brand is more about you as a person, because you've gone through many phases in your career. Even though now many people probably think of it and it's synonymous with the, with your casting, you know, I know what I'm going to get from an Artosis cast.
Yeah.
I mean, like, did you ever almost descend into parody, like Athene or anyone like that, when you were trying to brand yourself? And, you know, like,
what do you mean?
Well, like, say for example, like, right, his shtick is he wants to be the world's best pro gamer. So he finds way to game systems within games, ladders, leagues, so he can always say that, you know, I'm the best gamer, and he'll you know, point to something that proves that, even though it, you know, it's bullshit. We all know it's bullshit. He says it's a persona. So when you were like talking about how, you know, you wanted to be the best player and stuff, and you were calling yourself Artosis, did you ever, was there anything that came with that? You know, like, were you ever almost like acting, if you know what I mean?
No, that's like one thing that specifically I stay away from, like, heavily. And you can see that in things that are, that, like, for instance, my new show Meta is a good example of this. Like, what my brand is, what I am, is legitimacy. I have been playing StarCraft since it came out. I have given my entire life to it for countless years, countless hours. I've lapped the 10,000 hour rule like 4 times. Like, this is who I am. I am, like, when you hear Artosis, you have to think, I actually love StarCraft more than all of you. Sorry. I won that already, man. Like, I am.
That is a quote right there. That is. I love it. That's good stuff.
So I guess that's what it is. And I didn't mean to make it like that, but I'm just, like, really passionate about it. So that's just kind of, like, I guess what it's become. Like, this is just what I do. And, I mean, I don't know how long everyone that's listening to this right now is going to stay in this, but come back in 30 years, and you will literally be able to type in Artosis, and I will still be here as long as StarCraft is around and people are playing, man. Like, it's just... And I think that's something that people can feel inside of the brand, that, like, mm-hmm. I have been here forever, I will be here forever, I am eternal in StarCraft. Like, I'm going to have to get hit by a bus to fucking go away. And yeah, then there will still be my ghost at these events, right? Like, it's...
Oh, my God. The ghost Artosis. That haunts the GOM studios and various other places.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, like... I'm glad you say all that, man, because again, I always got that vibe. Like, I mean, obviously this is, you know, for the benefit of the people watching the stream, it's the first time me and Dan have actually ever had the pleasure of speaking with each other, so it's really cool. But yeah, it definitely always came across that, you know, you were one of the good guys in terms of just being, you know, genuinely giving a shit, and, you know, like putting the time in. You know, that always kind of came across in the work that you did. But I mean, what about in terms of, like, again, when you were kind of first putting it together, were you ever thinking, like, consciously, like, about how you would transition, how you would go through the phases, you know, like, what Artosis would come to mean? Like, did you have a final kind of achievement in mind when you started the esports journey?
Well, it changed over the years, right? Like, at first, I just decided to get really good at StarCraft because I was intrigued by it, and I was like, well, I'm going to get so good, because I was reading, like, battle reports on Battle.net back then about players like Jolly and Kane the Feared and Crazy Jim Lizard and stuff, and Gurr and all those guys, and I was like, this is too cool that people are actually writing about how good these players are, and I'm such a good gamer, I'm going to get there. So I was like, I'm just going to be really fucking good at this game. And that was my first goal. And then, you know, I got better and started playing in a lot of tournaments. And, you know, my name became pretty well known in StarCraft 1, like, by 2001. Like, people knew Artosis on Battle.net. And, you know, I just, from there, like, by about, it was in 2004, actually, like, early 2004, I actually decided, I'm like, the next phase of my career, like, and I didn't think of it as a career, but I'm like, then, well, I guess that's when I started thinking of it as a career, because, of course, I still wasn't really making money. Like, I won a few tournaments here and there and, like, prizes that I could sell on eBay and, like, that type of thing. But then I decided, like, I am going to Korea. That's it. I'm going to either die or I'm going to go to Korea. And that was as a pro gamer, of course. And then even when I got to Korea 4 years later or so, that was a long goal to reach right there. It was as a commentator,
yeah.
But, like, I still had it in my mind that I was going to play. And then everything kind of went to shit on that, and I was completely unable to. And, like, you know, I've always had something in mind, but it wasn't what I ended up achieving. But I think that actually lends to what I was talking about before, the overall legitimacy. Like, mm-hmm. even... I guess last year is when I actually, in my brain, I was like, am I a commentator? Which is weird, because everyone is like, yes, you're a fucking commentator, you idiot.
No shit, like, I would have told you that.
Because I've been commentating for a living for over 5 years, like, and I've been commentating longer than that. So, like, I think that goes towards the whole, like, my brand is legitimacy, because, like, I always consider myself, like, inside my deep brain, I am a player who commentates, or I was, and just literally, like, last year, I'm like, uh-oh. Am I really a commentator at this point? Like, this is scary, man. Am I ever going to actually play in a professional tournament again? You know, it's a weird concept for my brain, because it's, like, been the actual goal of everything the whole time.
So was this before or after you were trying to qualify for code? Is it code A or code?
Well, I mean, I've tried to qualify over the years. Like, I qualified for the first one that GSL had, but I mean, I entered a lot of those, and there were some that I didn't just because I was so out of practice. Many.
Okay. I only thought you did, like, maybe two, but it sounds like you've done a bunch.
No, I mean, when the first season of GSL, I actually had a plane ticket to Raleigh for MLG, but it overlapped. Because I went to Europe and got cheesed out by Morrow for that IM. It was so bad. And then I was going to Raleigh from there with Greg, and then we had to reschedule plane tickets to go back and qualify for GSL. Like, and the thing was, I was already talking to them, and once I qualified, I was like, I was like, what do I do? They're not going to let me do both. And they're like, yeah, yeah, no, go ahead, do both. But, like, then I was spending so much time commentating because I didn't want to do a bad job. I was, like, really working on that, and I was actually moving, and everything just kind of fell to shit. And I still tried to qualify a bunch of times. It came really close a whole bunch of times to getting in. But, like, you know, eventually at some point my brain started to understand that actually I'm not a pro player anymore, which is, like, this weird, like, defeated type of idea. But not that I don't like commentating. Yeah, in a certain way.
Wow, like, really?
The goal of my life was always pro gamer, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, that builds my brand as a commentator so much better, I think. That's what it seems like to me, because I've really, like, I wanted it, I tried so hard, I was very good, I've had a lot of success as a pro gamer way back. You know, I still try to play as much as humanly possible. I still have the urge to get my skill back and play in some tournaments. But yeah, at this point, I guess I'm like, okay, I guess I'm a commentator, but I still want to play. Wow. Right. And it's not like I'll ever stop being a commentator at this point. So, I don't know. It's a weird answer to your question, but I guess that's what my goals were with my brand.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it does legitimize you completely. And it's funny because, it's kind of surprising to hear that, because for me, it's the player side of you is what actually gives you the tools and the characteristics of making you the best caster. You know what I mean? So that's why it kind of surprises me, because I just feel like, oh, maybe you just realize that, oh, no, the casting is actually the thing for me, you know? And, okay, cool. But yeah, I absolutely agree with all that though. I mean, there's no doubting your legitimacy at all, and you know your brand is exactly what you've explained here, and it's really great to hear you talk about it. Just the fact that you and Nick got together and even talked about Tastos and all that stuff pretty early on, because I think a lot of people don't do that at all. I don't even know of another caster offhand that I know of probably planned or just did that sort of exercise. From the get-go, you know, a lot of these like Bitter Dance and stuff, I bet, you know, obviously probably came from, you know, your model of the casting Archon, but I don't know if do you know of anybody, Richard, that's actually like a caster that's actually thought about their brand like from the get-go?
To be honest, I think more and more do it now. I mean
everybody has a call name, everybody has a moniker, but
everyone's trying too hard to fucking brand, if we're honest. Like, everyone's really trying hard, like, right from the start now, oh, how can I be this thing, yeah? Like, no one wants to just see where it takes them, just be the cat. Everyone wants to have the angle.
Like,
and I get why that's happening.
Like who?
You know,
I hate to call people out, but, like who?
Oh, no. You know I ain't going to call people out, man. I can't afford that. I already got the Root guys.
I can't even think
if I ever bump
anybody,
into a Root fan at an event, I'm going to get shanked.
That
so
has
I,
nothing.
I'm not,
oh, God.
I'm not going to call people out, right? I mean, definitely not going to do that on air, especially not with, like, probably has got the biggest viewing numbers ever. I'm not going to do it now, not in this show. I will happily.
I mean, I'm just. I just can't think of anybody.
People go into it now with this awareness. You know, it's like. It's like anything, you know, you look at the success of other people and you want to emulate that success. So you look at the model they took and you emulate it.
But there's nothing
because
wrong
you
with
think
branding,
this,
though.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the branding. But what I'm saying is people go into it now and they're trying a little bit too hard, I'd say, to be the brand, you know, rather than just to be a fucking kick-ass caster or a kick-ass writer or a kick-ass player. You know, they want to be the brand first rather than just be fucking good first. You know, that's, you know, I see that a lot. Dan probably, I don't know, doesn't have an opinion.
No, I get what you're saying about that. Yeah. I think quality is the most important thing. But you also said actually a lot earlier in the conversation, being yourself, and I think that's super, super important. If you look at everyone that's big, they're like, they start out completely just being themselves. Like, me and Nick are exactly, like, people are in shock because they see us off camera and we are the same. We are making jokes constantly and just shooting the shit and being friends and teasing each other. Like, what you see is what you get. We're just like, that's what it is. And, like, look at how Day 9 got his start, right? Like, brilliant analyst, one of the smartest StarCraft 1 guys there was. And it's just people being themselves, I think, have done the best. Because it's like, there's nothing wrong with you. You are a cool nerd as you are. The fact that you like StarCraft is cool, man. And just be yourself. And if you're truly being yourself and having a good time and having some confidence, people are going to like you. Because who spends time disliking people? That's weird. Like, come on. What? Like, if you're being yourself and putting in effort, like, people are going to end up liking you, I think.
That's... Who spends time disliking people? I mean, have you been on the social net?
People, but I guess my point is, ignore that. Like, be yourself. Like, it's really, I think that that's very important. Like, I am who you see here. I have flaws. I have things that are good about me. But I be myself. I'm passionate about it. And people like that. And I feel like when I watch a commentator, if I'm like, yeah, this is who this guy is, this is cool, you know, that I end up liking him.
Yeah, so, and I think
like you know, I think Rotterdam is a good example of that, of someone that's really come up a lot more lately.
Yeah,
that's fucking Rotterdam you're watching on that camera, man. That's I swear true. To God, I hung out with that guy, and he's I love him. Awesome. You know, it's yeah. but
well, I mean, you can make a claim that you know being yourself and you know people accepting it, that's the easiest scenario too, right? I mean, you don't have to do anything different. You just have to be yourself.
You're not going to be happy if you're acting all the time. I mean, unless you want to be an actor, I guess, but.
I mean, a lot of people, at least in other industries, right? I mean, brands are created off of not necessarily being themselves, right? I mean, they're more actors, so...
I think this is an interesting thing, because I was going to go on one of my fucking famous tangents, but it seems like it's a good kind of segue now. Okay. And that is, like, right, when I understand about branding, like, believe it or not, even though no one knows who the fuck I am, you know, I did try to build a brand once upon a time. My gamer name was Gonzo. I had a regular column in esports dealing with the seedy underbelly of esports, all the nasty shit that was going on called Gonzeria, you know, hilarious.
That's where it came from. Okay, no, that's okay. Yeah.
Then when I got to like 30, I had like the fucking esports midlife crisis, and was like, nah, fuck gamer names. I don't want a gamer name. Like I think that with that there comes an inherent almost artifice. You know, like I'm being false, but by almost like by definition of that. I mean, I'm not saying this is true. Sure. This is just what was going through my mind, right? Mm-hmm. So I got rid of it, and I was like, my stamp is going to be my name. I'm going to put my name on everything, and then people know it's really me. And you can never get into the arguments, oh, but he's so fake, or it's so contrived. His guns rear columns are trying too hard, or whatever. It's just, you know, my name. But unfortunately for me, I share a name with a 65-year-old Jewish comedian, so no one fucking takes me seriously anyway. So
that's actually, I really like what you just said there. That makes a really, that's a very good point. Having your actual name on your columns, definitely, I mean, that's going to lend legitimacy. You're like, this is who I am. Here I am. You can Google me. Like,
I get
there's it's a different feel from an ID for sure.
But
equally, I mean, the trouble with that is it's almost like the antithesis of building a brand. What I did was I deconstructed my own brand, so there was no brand, there was just a guy. And I that's definitely hindered my
that's
esports
a brand in and of itself, right?
Yeah,
like you now bro. You do have a brand, the Richard Lewis brand. This is true, man.
I don't know. I don't see myself as branded.
You're being yourself. Like people, if someone says Richard Lewis, people know the types of comments that they're likely to expect, the fact that you're going to bring in a certain point of view and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is just by being like, you know what, I'm going to be myself and use my name and this is all going to be real. That is a type of branding, right? Like,
I mean, that's as fair as you get, right? I mean, that's actually you, right?
It makes it hard though as well, because like I guess, and I don't know, again, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Dan, because right, I know it doesn't happen to you often, but once upon a time I'm sure you were criticized by the esports community, right? Like I'm sure it must have happened. It happens to everybody.
Oh yeah,
right? I mean that's the biggest thing about developing in esports is, can you break through that barrier of the first time you get absolutely shit on for 3 days by everyone through, you know, all manner of chat programs, you know, forums and stuff. But you know, it makes the criticism, like, because it's my name that's on there, my actual real, you know, God given name or whatever. You know, it makes the criticism actually like fucking hurt more. There's no you can't personal. Separate it.
Yeah.
It's Richard Lewis is the asshole, not Gonzo. So when someone criticizes Artosis, can you take a step back and say, well, you know, fuck it, it's not about me?
Well, actually, yes, but for a different reason, because, like, I've been Artosis so long, and StarCraft has been, like, the most important thing in my life, basically, until I got a baby. So, like, it was so important that, like, Artosis and Dan are synonymous for me. Like, me and Nick call each other Artosis, Tasteless, Dan, and Nick. Like, they're it's interchangeable. It's completely, like, I call him Nick and Tasteless half the time each. And he does the same with Dan and Artosis with me. So they're, like, it's really a part of who we are at this point, because we've had these IDs forever and they've been so important and stuff like that. And a huge amount of my friends, like, the majority of my friends are StarCraft people. So they actually, especially at first, only call you by your ID. So it's, like, kind of melded together. But, yeah, I can definitely take a step back when people are criticizing on the internet because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. You know, like, sometimes there's some good criticism. Then I'm like, oh, this is good criticism because, you know, that's important to be able to do. But, you know, when it's, like, the pitchforks come out, I just turn the internet off because I'm like, oh, these people are stupid. Or if they come out on Twitter or something, I just block them because it's like, well, you are so ignorant and stupid. This is not worth my time. So that, I think that's more of, like, the grizzled. I've been in esports so long and taken so much shit that I've realized that, like, you're going to go crazy if you listen to what some little kid in his mom's basement has to say about you in a negative light, you know, like it. Mm-hmm. So it's a different way that I separate myself. It's not behind the shield of, well, there's Artosis and there's me, because Artosis isn't acting. Artosis is Dan Simkowski. I play StarCraft all the time, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I can definitely see how people could use it as a, just kind of a layer, right? Just a layer, just to kind of separate yourself from. But okay, so
yeah, I could definitely see it.
Let's talk a little bit about, I guess the monetization part of branding, and I think we'll talk a little bit about EMG and some of the things you know, they're doing with you too. But to start off, you know, you guys started that website like a while ago, right? Before EMG, so selling shirts and that sort of thing. How'd that go, actually? What I've heard from other folks that have been doing merch, like obviously TB and those kind of guys, it's actually pretty lucrative. Did it work out for you guys too, or?
Yeah, I mean, Handsome Nerd does pretty well, but we put like a lot of the money made back in. We've done things like sponsored TSL. We've tried to help out players and stuff like that. We sponsored players occasionally, and we're definitely going to do some more of that as well. I mean, it does pretty well overall.
Is Handsome Nerd a brand, or is it just a brand, or is it a company?
It's both. It's a brand both? And a company.
Okay. Yeah. No, because you know some things are just brands actually. But yeah. Okay, cool.
I mean, the Handsome Nerd is like it's more than just a way for us to make money. Like, it's nice to make a few extra bucks from it or something, but it really what it started out as and what we really want to continue it as is like, yeah, I like to see people at events in those shirts. Because we try to put on only shirts that we actually like and wear ourselves, right? So we want people to actually be wearing good-looking stuff. There's a lot of, as I said before, nerdy shirts out there that are pretty garbage, in my opinion, and Nick's opinion. So, these are, like, we try to, like, incorporate a lot of, like, for instance, it's mostly StarCraft shirts right now.
Yeah.
And it'll be, like, a StarCraft image that also kind of blends in with real life a lot of the time. Like, for instance, we have probably my favorite one is a Baneling that looks like a grenade. And it's basically a grenade with Baneling legs, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, this is just a cool shirt no matter how you look at it. Like, this is a good-looking shirt. You don't have to play StarCraft at all. You can be like, oh, wow, a grenade with legs, that's kind of artsy and neat, you know? And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
This is a cool way for you to show your love for StarCraft but still look cool and still be able to wear this anywhere, right? And so that's been an important aspect. And the helping out of, like, I was really happy to help out TSL while they were still around. We put a lot into them, and, you know, that's a type of, like, really feel-good something to do. Like, I feel like the Handsome Nerd has done a lot of good in the past. We've tried to, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done our best with that. So
would you sponsor another team? I mean,
we may. I don't know. We're actually, now that we have EMG with us, because Nick and I are so busy at this point, I can't even, like, I haven't played StarCraft in 1 week now. It's killing. Whoa. I haven't played since last Thursday. I'm like,
Crazy.
I've been so busy. And so that's why, like, Handsome Nerd was, like, kind of falling down for a little bit. Like, it wasn't updated for a long time. But we actually, with EMG now, they're helping us out, getting people to help us to, you know, get the site revamped and that type of thing, so that we can actually get it back going into what it was and that type of thing. So, I mean, we may end up doing something with a team again in the future or something like that, because that's definitely, it's like a very rewarding way to do it, because it's, I mean, it's great advertisement, of course, but you're helping the team and you're like, I don't know, I like that type of thing.
So talk about working with EMG, because a lot of folks, you know, we've had Tumba on here before, when we've had like Too Good talk about their agency too and that sort of thing, but you know, I don't think I've ever had any of our guests actually talk about their experience with, you know, an agency in particular, EMG. So I know you guys are kind of like the face, or pretty much the face, in a way, like the person that they always are marketing, right, in terms of EMG. So, yes, speak to us a little bit about just how they've helped you in the form of sponsorships, because obviously you've got multiple sponsorships, some of them too huge, like TTE, right? Yeah. And I know you guys have other projects going, maybe Handsome Nerd being one of them or not, but speak a little bit about those.
Well, EMG has been the greatest experience that I've had as far as working with a company. They're actually like just there for us to help us out in every way and get us deals like that. Like, you know, like a team is some sort of glorified agent for the players, but the team builds the players and themselves. And while I guess EMG kind of builds themselves through building us, we're getting built directly, right? So it's a very nice feeling knowing that, like, I have a very specific deal. You know, if you have a team with one super famous player and then a bunch of lesser players, is the super famous player getting as much as he brings in? No, that's being divvied up a little bit more. Whereas when you have an agent, it's a little bit more fair in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, it's more service oriented, right? Versus having multiple brands like you're talking about with the team and having, I guess, their own interests at times, you know, at times they have a bigger interest in some of the things that they end up doing with
certainly.
You.
Yeah. And then it's a question of, you know, who's getting the sponsors, the team or the players and stuff like that. And it can be like, it can go one way or the other, you know, and who knows. But with having an agent, like, it's amazing. You know, I no longer sign shitty contracts. That's something that happens to a lot of people in esports. Most of the contracts in esports are the most terribly one-sided, not towards the player type contracts that you could ever even imagine. They're disgusting. They are so one-sided and
like
gross.
Like sponsorships
With like teams and
teams.
There's
yeah.
all sorts of like any contract you can think of, a lot of these are grossly one-sided. And the thing is, there's a certain reason, like, a lot of the people signing these are kids that need to be like reined in just right, because they could destroy the image you built for your team or something, right?
Sure.
But
mm-hmm.
you know, I know how to act and you know, I know how to be a reasonable human. So, anyways, that's one of the beautiful things about having an agency. They take care of so much of our stuff. Like, it really helps out. Like, I don't know. They do what agents do, you know?
Wait, do you give them parameters? Like, do you give Tumba, do you tell Tumba, hey, like, I want to get a peripheral sponsorship. Or, you know, I want to get a peripheral sponsorship that's going to, you know, somehow pay me royalties, you know, because I get a chance to design my own line of, you know, gear, like you guys have gotten a chance to. Did you tell him to do those things, or did he find those things for you?
Well, they find a lot. I don't remember exactly with, like, TT Sports how that went. Well, no, actually, I do remember when I was first signing on, I'm like, look, I want, like, what I have wanted forever, back when I was a pro gamer and stuff, I'm like, I want to design some equipment, because so much of the shit out there is exactly that, it's shit. They're like, how many buttons can we fit on this mouse? Look at this, a billion DPI. And, like, people just don't know about this stuff. Whereas I've used, like, every mouse in existence. Like, I know some stuff about what makes a good mouse for gaming, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's always been a dream of mine, is to be able to actually produce what I want, because what I want doesn't exactly exist. Because it's you know, it's actually a useful tool rather than something that... Mm-hmm. has all these things that you can put on the box and say, well, you should buy it because look at all these extra things it has. I don't need that extra shit. What I need is the functional, really good mouse at a decent price, right? So that was when I first joined EMG. That was one of my main things. I'm like, I really want a peripheral sponsor. I want to work with a peripheral company and actually make good stuff because I'm so sick of this other stuff. So that was definitely one. But, I mean, it's definitely they take a lot of feedback from Nick and I, and we take a lot of feedback from them, and we just try to figure out what's right, right? Yeah. Like,
I remember
we had shitty computers, and now we're sponsored by iBuyPowerMan, and we have sick computers, and our streams are better. It's like this just makes sense for everybody.
Right. I remember, I think Tumba, when he was on here, mentioning that Nick in particular, like, kind of only wanted sponsors from things that he actually used.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure if that's still true or not, but are you like that too? Like, you can only be sponsored, you know, you're not the type of guy that's just going to, oh, this sponsor comes, he's willing to pay a lot, and, you know, you just kind of sell their product, and whether you use it or even believe it or not sometimes.
Well, let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. If someone comes in with, and they want to give me $1 million to sponsor, like, have McDonald's as a sponsor, right? I'm a vegetarian, everyone knows that. Would I take that deal for $1 million? You better believe I would take that deal for $1 million. But, no, it is definitely true. Like, we definitely want sponsors for the things we actually like and use. I'm not gonna like sell out unless it's like $1 million, right? Like, no one can blame me.
All right, what's your sellout number? We all have a sellout number.
$1 million.
Okay, that's okay.
What it is. Everyone always says $1 million, and then the offer for $100,000 comes in. You realize just how low you're fucking willing to go. Like.
I guess that we'll have to wait and see. But no, seriously, we definitely want to. I want to be passionate about what I'm showing people. Like, yeah. As I said, my brand is legitimacy. I am actually making sick products with TT Esports, and I'm going to be passionately showing people what these are and why these are actually better. Mm-hmm. And like, this is a badass PC right there. There it is. It's a badass PC. iBuyPower. Like, I believe in this. I need a new PC. This one kicks ass. My stream is getting better because of it. Like, you know, these are important things. Like, let's say a cigarette company wants to sponsor me. I will never, ever, 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 ever take that. Like, that's just, no, that's smoking's bad. I don't want to smoke. This is stupid. So, yeah, I mean, it is true. We want sponsor specifically stuff that we use, that we like, stuff like that. And that's what the agency goes after. They don't go after stuff that we aren't going to like. They just, right. There's no reason, because, I mean, why put an overlay on my stream for something I don't like that I'm going to be half-hearted about? It's we're not going to do a good job for them, and it's not going to look good or anything.
Okay, yeah, definitely. So one of the things I know with EMG is that I feel like you guys, you know, not only are they your agents, right? I feel like in some ways they're your business partner in some things. Is that true? In some projects?
Yeah. Like, for instance, Handsome Nerd. We are working with them on that, right? Like, the Handsome Nerd, I don't know if they need an agency, but the thing is, Nick and I don't have the time to do that anymore. As of, like, 2012, we basically just haven't had the time. Okay. So, you know, they're business-minded people, and we came to an agreement where they're going to really help us to get it back up to what we want it to be, where we don't have to spend 20 hours a week working on it like we were before.
Right.
So, I mean, in that way, yeah, I guess that's more of a business partner than an agent. Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. So with this whole just agency model, what's your opinion on the future of teams and agencies? Do you see this becoming a more popular thing? I know EMG in particular, I think they only have one player, which is an ST, right?
We have White Raw.
Oh, White Raw 2. Yeah, White Raw 2. But for the most part, it's mostly casters and personalities. But there are other agencies, kind of like CSN, right, that has, I think, three players now. And I know the good agency is starting to, you know, starting to do things too, whether it's Dota 2 or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I think we're starting to see it more. We're starting to see more personal sponsors these days. You know, just not necessarily team-related type of things. So what are your thoughts? What do you think of the future?
Well, I think that both are completely needed. They're both super, super important because not every player can bring in personal sponsors. That is for certain. Sometimes you need to get a group together to do that. And that's also going to require some really big names. You look at, like, EG. Like, they build people up mm-hmm. that can't get personal sponsors. They have some people that could, but the team atmosphere might be just right. Whereas you look at some people, like, for instance, I think White Raw is the perfect example for a pro that doesn't belong on a team. Like,
yeah.
White Raw on a team is never going to get what his actual value is, right? He's to get what he actually, what he's worth, because this guy is literally, like, one of our emissaries for esports. He's, like, a very important person for StarCraft that yeah. doesn't necessarily have the most skill or something. He's yeah. still very good, but being such a personality, like, he is a perfect type of pro gamer to be with an agency instead, where he plays tournaments and he does actually quite well in them, but he also does a lot of, like, speaking or going over, you know, to do an event, maybe some side stuff or whatever.
He's an ambassador. That's, he's, like, the ambassador, I think we...
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was looking for, an emissary, mm-hmm. ambassador. So,
yeah.
like, for someone like him, that is a great idea. And, you know, you see Grubby is doing it on his own, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, he's someone that... well, he's his own agent, and that's... But that's, like, an agency as opposed to a team. And yeah. that works out very well for him. It's certainly not for everyone, but for some people, it just makes more sense that, you know, they aren't team people. Like, I can't imagine so easily Grubby going onto a team anymore. Can you? I mean,
yeah.
for me, that's a little bit hard. I look at him like, no, you know what? I think he does very well by himself. And White Raw does very well not on a team.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Cassandra helps some people. A lot.
For me, I think it's about when, I mean, like, you know, what you're talking about there with White Raw, I mean, that's a fantastic example. But with Grubby, in a way, I almost feel it's like any team you put him on, it's like the expectations of an organization are going to be kind of tawdry. You know, like, this is like a guy who's done so much, been around for so long, you know, not just in StarCraft, obviously, you know, Warcraft as well. Yeah, so I feel almost if you put them into an organization, it's like they can almost achieve more without it. You know, it's like the organization would be riding along on their coattails rather than vice versa.
That's, yeah, exactly, which is part of what I said earlier. You know, if you're part of a team and you're a huge name, are you going to, for how much the deck is based around how big you are you going to get the appropriate compensation for that when there's a lot of other players to pay for? It becomes a funny balance where you're like, well, you know what, maybe I need a team of practice partners. Maybe I need a team that has a house. And
yeah.
there's different ways that you're going to have to leverage it and find out what's best for you when you become one of these big players. But, you know, that's...
Yeah, it's funny because...
Everyone's got to decide it for themselves, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because I had this, obviously, this conversation, like, with a lot of people, and my thoughts have always been with the team is that it's, I don't want to call it necessary evil, but it's kind of necessary right now in our industry, just given that the age of a lot of players, the mm-hmm. professionalism of a lot of players, they just don't, outside of, like, maybe pulling their parents, they don't actually have the knowledge or the business savvy to actually go and hire an agency and even know what the agency is going to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like these teams have kind of been that facility for them for a while.
Oh, totally. And I think teams always have to be around. I think that they are so yeah. important because there's not going to be any other way to enter in. Like, you see a lot of these teams opening the academy type stuff mm-hmm. where they're yeah. like, all right, well, you're going to be like someone we're watching and, you know, you're going to be able to work your way up. And
yeah.
that's the thing. It gives a place for people to start. And in fact, for some people, the agency will never be the right call, right? Like, if yeah. you look at, like, the Koreans, right? They need that team atmosphere because it's completely about skill over here. So they need to be in a team that's practicing all the time, and it's going to have more to do with the team's skill than the money paid and stuff like that. Whereas yeah. maybe you look in the foreigner scene, it's a little bit different. It might be more about, like, well, this player, White Raw, isn't the best, but he markets himself very well. He's actually an ambassador for the game. He's actually a very important person that's going to do as many speaking engagements as tournaments. So it's going to make more sense the other way for him.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. It'll, you know, if the team houses were a little bit different here in the U.S., it would, this, you know, this discussion might be a little bit different, too. As
oh,
the,
certainly,
the
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always going to fluctuate, too, like the importance of one versus the other. And yeah, but both are needed, and it's so much healthier now that we actually have both in the industry, I would say.
Yeah, but it kind of muddy. You have to say, it does kind of muddy the concept of team because, you know, we do have, like, team leagues. You know, we do have mm-hmm. things that have nothing to do with the agency business side of things, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, here, you know, in NA and whatnot, you know, it does I feel like function more as an agency, a lot more so than, you know, the actual Korean team, you know, like pro league type of teams, right? So
it's kind of weird there. The whole spectrum, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right, why don't we move on? And I had this topic meta, but we'll spend like 5 minutes on meta. So how you liking being a show host, man?
It's pretty fun. I like it. It's not that hard or anything, I don't think.
Bastard. You're making it look easy now.
To be fair, I take a nap after meta every single time. I actually just fall asleep because it takes a lot of energy. But I thought, you know, going in that it might be like harder than it was. But, you know, I'm improving at it and getting better. It's a little bit different from being a guest on a show, for sure. The guest is definitely way easier. There's nothing easier than being a guest on a show, man. But, no, I like it. It's fun. I really like what I'm doing with meta. I'm staying away from drama completely and just, like, focusing on what I care about, which is the game, and, like, focusing on having a lot of pro gamers as guests and stuff. I really want to give them a bit more of a voice on some of these shows. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say, I guess, is I like the direction I'm bringing meta more than I like any other show out there, and... So I really, I'm totally into my own show. It's badass.
Okay. Let's just. I was going to ask another question, but I won't ask it. We'll go on. Let's move on to kind of.
No. Why not?
All right.
You can't throw that out there, Chris. Come on.
Well, I was just going to ask, like, you know, obviously you were on Say the Game before, right? And obviously you're taking the part that you liked in Say the Game. You've said that this many times. Taking the part of Say the Game and making it your own show. And you were trying to avoid drama, but the thing is, I guess straight up, like, was there drama involved in all that?
With leaving Say the Game?
Yeah.
There were some really big disagreements.
Okay.
You know, I want to make a really great show that's, like, fair and good and has a lot of great content and, you know, has the pieces that I want. And so I made Meta. I just broke off and... Mm-hmm. There was a lot of disagreements.
Okay, fair enough. That's about as much as I'll dig, Richard. Okay, but
I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to say, as a host, it's your responsibility to dig, and yes, I'm just going to leave that there.
Yes. Well, we're running a little late, so I wanted to get to this next topic, which is kind of our token SE2 topic, because you know, watching Meta, watching to Say the Game all these years, and you know, just listening to you talk about strategy, you know, I've always thought, oh my god, he's like reading my mind. I mean, this is like crazy. It's like a kindred spirit but he just doesn't know anything. Just doesn't know anything about me about this connection. But so I figured I'd throw in an SE2 topic here that's related to strategy and has to do with maps, because I'm not sure if you know, but I had an episode all about map making. You know, I had the map making community on here to discuss maps, and one of the things that we talked about was just the impact of maps and how it impacts meta and how it impacts balance, and should it be taking a bigger role, and should there be just more creativity in the maps to really push...
You want me to start? Because I have plenty to say on this subject. This is...
Exactly.
Okay, in StarCraft 1, the game got to a point, and then all that changed were maps, to the point where they would choose what race was going to win sometimes based on the maps.
Okay,
like,
I can see that.
People heard like about, what did we call it? Like the Protoss Autumn or something? Thing is, it was really hard for Protoss to win overall. Mm-hmm. And then they would just tweak the map slightly in a season, and that season would always have a Protoss winner. Because that's what the balance will come down to in the end.
Yeah,
you can go back and look. And it was all map-based, because the game stopped getting patches in StarCraft 1 in, like, 2007 or something.
Mm-hmm,
like
right.
I think that was our last minor patch, and it was, like, I can't even remember. But, like, we ended patches forever ago in StarCraft 1, and then it was all maps. And StarCraft 2 will become that. We're still working on it, and it can't really become that until Legacy of the Void is out and balanced. But you get it to a certain point, and then you figure out exactly what exactly... are the specifications for a map and what leans it one way or the other. And it will come down, like, in StarCraft 1, just to throw this out there, because that was by far, like, the most advanced thing that we've had so far. New maps that were coming out, every team practiced the shit out of them, and then there were meetings about it to see, actually, what is the balance of this map? What does this map do? Whereas in StarCraft 2, we're not really quite doing that yet. You'll see the balance of a map shift during the season, Like, you'll actually, I remember in Pro League, there was like a map that started out only PvPs, and by the end it was only ZVZs. Like, right. I can't remember the name of it, it was that desert map, but, you know, eventually maps are going to be what balances and unbalances the game. It's just going to be like, how wide is the entrance to your third, how close are your bases, what direction are you expanding in, but it's going to be like, it will get super, super, super precise, but this can't happen until the rest of the game is so goddamn balanced, like, ridiculously so. Which, it's actually, like, much closer than people seem to realize, but
yeah,
it still minute. Has a ways.
Yeah. No, it's just a
fix
few
that, held that up a little bit, and we'll see.
Yeah, exactly, right. No, you know, my comment about the maps is just that, you know, I agree, you know, the way it's being balanced, and I didn't really go through the whole Brood War evolution, so, you know, obviously you can educate me on some of that, too. But the thing for me is that I feel like it's a very generalized balancing, right, that's going on right now, right? And balancing has to happen based on a certain type of map. I mean, you just kind of summed that up right now. I mean, there's, you know, you can't, like, one thing we've always talked about, you can't balance, or it's perceived that you cannot balance the game on a map like Steps of War. Because Steps of War plays out a certain way, and it's like, how can you, you know, how can you actually balance, say, like, a game, you know, based on Steps of War? But it's always had a bad connotation. Steps of War has always had, like, this really bad connotation about how the game, like, would be played on that map. But for me, it's just, like, Steps of War is just, it just happens to be one type of map, right? Where yeah. we kind of gone to this, like, you know, it kind of evolved from these small maps into large maps, right, and very macro-based games, and we kind of perceive as a community, including casters, including yourself, I think we kind of perceived it as better games, because mm-hmm. The more macro-skilled players, or, you know, action skill, you know, just from an APM standpoint, they kind of, the longer the game goes, the more, I think, the higher their the difference in their skill level kind of plays a role, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the game's always been balanced, or at least the current state of the game's always been balanced on those macro-oriented games. And do you think that is what you're talking about with base balance? Is just these long games? Because, you know, again, like, I feel like even though the Koreans actually mix it up really well, you know, they actually, when they're playing a series, they do mix up a lot of, you know, proxy builds and that sort of thing, and mm-hmm. kind of mix that kind of thing. But I feel like a lot of times it's a bad, like, we just have a bad connotation with that type of play. That's cheesy, right? I mean, we can call it cheesy. Yeah. And in reality, it's not. It's just part of the array of play that's available in this
sure.
game, right?
Sure.
So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so, variation is something that has to be taken into consideration when making a good esport. I would go as far as to say, Richard Lewis, that some FPS games don't have enough variation in the winner. Like, I remember watching Quake tournaments, and I would tell you, out of the 16 players playing, these four in the top four, these four in the middle, these four at the bottom. Every time, right? Yep. And yep. you need a certain amount of variation, but you can't have too much variation, because if you have too much variation in winners, then you can't get storylines, and the pros won't stay, because yep. they're like, well, I'm the best, but too much randomness is occurring. So
yep.
the thing is that the smaller the map, the more cheesy it gets, the more variation you get, which is actually a big problem. And in fact, in StarCraft 1, one of the ways that you measured balance for Terran versus Zerg on a map is the second Terran leaves their base, because there was always a place for an Overlord to see this, or a Zergling to see this, the second they leave their base, if Zerg starts a sunken crawler, a sunken colony, which yeah. is a spine crawler
right.
In StarCraft 1, if it can't finish by the time the Terran gets there with a Marine Medic force, the map is imbalanced.
Yeah.
So, right. like, that is because otherwise, what the fuck are you going to do? Are you going to just sit there and make Zerglings and just make sunkens? You know?
Exactly.
So
it, right.
to stop the randomness and variation, you have to have the map to be a certain size. So mm-hmm. that's my opinion on that, and why we look more towards macro games, because the better player can get themselves on top more often in a slightly larger map, whereas Steps of War, the variation is going to go so crazy that you're just, it's not good for the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, with the Steps of War, I definitely agree with you that there has to be a baseline, you know, of I guess, parameters or restrictions, because that example you gave is perfect. Like, you know, you can't do anything about it. There's situations where you just cannot do anything about it. And those should definitely be taken into account. But I think that the smaller, there are some smaller maps that I feel like would force skirmishes, like that early on kind of, let's just throw out, like, Lingbane versus Splitting Marine, you know, those type of the situations, mm-hmm. right? And those in themselves, I mean, in some ways, those are sometimes more impressive. Like, you can actually see everything that's just going on, right? That's supposed to be impressive about that situation in the game. And, you know, like watching Marine King, for instance, those days, right? Like, when we would see just amazing splits by him, and he would just, you know, turn a battle around just with the cost efficiency of the splits. I feel like sometimes those skirmishes aren't valued enough. Like, just the ability to control micro, those situations aren't valued enough in the current state of things, because, again, like, it's just, and that's why you see things like, sometimes you see, like, Innovation losing to Roach Bane, you know, busts, and it's because he probably hasn't, as much as he's probably practiced defense against it, he probably hasn't practiced it just insane amount, you know what I mean? Just, like, because there's obviously so many other situations to practice, but it'd be, I mean, what do you think a pro would look like if he practiced those cheesy scenarios to the amount in which they practice everything else right now?
Well, the thing is, if you practice, because a pro's time is completely used up already, right? So yeah. Pro has X amount of hours a week. Let's say a pro plays 80 hours a week, which would actually, that's
yeah,
reasonable.
It's about,
right?
Yeah, it actually reasonable.
So what if they're practicing 40 hours macro and 40 hours of the earlier game cheesier stuff? That's the question, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty like, much, yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is, once you know a cheesy kind of aggressive build is coming, you can get a huge defender's advantage because you just, sure. It's not like for instance, if a Baneling attack is coming and I can figure that out as Protoss, I throw up some extra cannons and some extra buildings, and then I just win the game, right? So it doesn't matter how many times you practice the cheese, if the defender knows it's coming in time, they'll sop it every time.
Yeah, so, but that's a different thing though, right? That's I mean, okay, so keep going. I mean, you know, having information, obviously, is something that's not guaranteed,
yeah.
Right?
No, it's not, but you can do things to put that into your favor, and mm-hmm. at the end of the day, a lot of top and StarCraft matches come down to percentages. There yeah. were, like, in mm-hmm. StarCraft 1, we actually had percentages on some builds. It's like, this percent of the time on this map, yeah. you are going to get this amount of wins by mixing this into your play this amount, and it's like, it actually does get mapped out like that a little bit, which is why in Pro League with the Kestrel players in these best of one series, you're seeing a little bit more of this cheesy play because it is really good to mix in practice. Mm-hmm. But also, if you look at it, the person who's practicing these more early gamers for 40 hours and then 40 hours of macro, the player that is practicing scouting like a motherfucker and 80 hours of macro, which of course they're not going to ever do 80 macro and zero cheese, but
right.
way more macro and scouting like crazy during macroing, they're going to crush that guy because they have much more practice in the longer game where they're going to make fewer mistakes over time, and that's how you get the winner over a longer game. All you have to do is survive that early game. And
yeah,
especially if there's like someone known for practicing a ton of that cheese, that mm-hmm. comes in – that's where knowing the player is important. That's why everyone uses barcodes so they aren't known like that.
Right.
But if you know the style someone's going to use before they use it or what they're more inclined to do – you might just make an extra bunker because you're like, okay, this guy, like 60% of the time, does this all in. I'm going to throw down another bunker, which will make me safe against that 80% of the time.
Yep.
And suddenly, is that advantage enough to negate the missing 100 minerals when he's playing yeah. the complete macro greedy game?
No, but right. But that decision right there changes meta too.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know what I mean? Because it sets you back that 100, let's just say, right? And it changes things, and it kind of, like, I always throw out the example, I remember I was talking to Grace Warp about this, that, you know, we talked about Galzi, for instance, right? Galzi, who's just like, you know, just all he does is cannon, you know, and he was like cannoning his way to GM on NA, you know, that sort of thing. Have you ever done that? Have you ever done that before? Have you tried to just cannon, like, every single game?
Hell no.
Of course
not. See, I'm the 80 hours.
I know, exactly, exactly. But, you know, there's some, I don't know, like, watching some of that play sometimes, even though it's, like, super cheesy, and I get it, you know, like, it is crazy, but watching the knowledge and the depthness of it, and, you know, just sometimes watching, like, Grubby, you know, sometimes throw a cannon, you know, like, a cannon in the natural, and just how they have it mapped out exactly to the pixel, right, and just where the probes go, and I mean, that adeptness, I feel like, I don't see all the time, you know what I mean? And I feel like if we saw it more, we'd see some, like, Zergs losing to that, like, more often and things like that.
Certainly.
And I'm just wondering if the game will ever get to that point. Like, or with Brood War, did it ever get to that point where it's just like the early game was as practiced as the late game?
Yeah. Like, okay. Eventually, the thing is, the more valuable skill is the skill of being able to actually keep your macro up,
yeah,
right?
And Brood War was different in that regard, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the thing is, I think that's the most important thing for people to work on, and no one's hitting that perfect area. But, like, for instance, Innovation is God mode macro right now, right? But you look at some of his Bunker SCV rushes, and he pulls off some amazing shit. You can tell he's actually spending a little bit more time practicing that than maybe some others, because he is already at such a level with this other stuff. But at the same time, it doesn't take as much skill to pull off some of these early things. Like, I can probably spend a couple hours total figuring out perfect cannon placements, and then just look at the timings of Overlords and Hatcheries and be done, and just know. I'm like, oh, these are the places I put it. This is when my probe leaves. That's much less complicated than being like, this is how I get into minute 17 with a perfect economy and +3. You know, like, that's... Mm-hmm. So it's going to take more practice for that anyways. And the thing is, you can kind of fill in the cheese if you're already good at the stuff quicker later.
Yeah. So kind of, you know, filling in the cheese is kind of a perfect way to put it. That's cool. Definitely cool. And so from the standpoint of maps, are there any concepts that you think that have not been introduced into any of the professional maps that you think would be something that's legitimate and cool?
That's a neat question. What do you mean exactly?
All kinds of different things. I mean, there's like all kinds of different things. Like, let's just say, throw out one, like High Ground, or like changing map, like lava, you know, like actual, you know, third environmental kind of changes. I know my, Sigma just built a map where it has like changing bridges. It's like really weird, but it's kind of interesting. Like, how much of the environment, like how much, I guess, you want kind of environmentally, or things that kind of change environmentally and can't affect like the players in a way?
Well, that's actually like a super interesting question I've never thought about. Off the top of my head, there are certain like actual timings that are required in the game from all three races where it's like, well, if you have not pressured right now in TVZ, the Zerg is going to overrun you or something like that. So
yeah, sure.
I could see some problems with that, but the thing is, we've never tried anything like that. So, I mean, I would love, I would love for one of these leagues to actually throw it in and see what pro gamers come up with, but there might be glaring imbalances because of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, absolutely. I mean, there could always be glaring.
There could be
by any map. So,
and that's the thing, you have to be really careful with what you throw into the pro scene, because you don't want a glaring imbalance suddenly popping up in the middle of the tournament, and then there's a program that's like, "Wow, I don't have good results this season. I'm in Challenger League now. This sucks."
No, I don't think you should. I don't think you should experiment in the pro tournaments. You know, especially the top ones for sure.
Yeah,
but. Yeah. You know, there should be a place where you can try out maps, right? Whether it's the ladder, which I don't know if it's the ladder, but or unranked. But I feel like, you know, in those situations where we're throwing in, like, environmental things, you really change the game itself. Like, the game can be... That's the thing about StarCraft 2. It could be so much. Like, it's like, I don't want to say it's endless, but what it can be, like, in different... Depending on what the maps are, is... Like, not even close to what it is now yet, because we've only been working off of one type of map for the most part. So
that's I would love to see it, man.
Yeah.
I really would.
Do a show. Do a meta on maps, dude. That'd be cool.
One
to hear. It'd be cool to see, man. Yeah. But okay, why don't we go to Q&A? You guys mind taking a few questions?
Sure.
Cool. All right, guys. If you guys want to ask any three of us a question, go ahead and add me on or. Call me on Skype. My Skype ID is ChamMV, or add me on Skype, and I'll pull you in. Ender's been dying. Oh my god, he's been dying to jump on our call. So
anyone that enthusiastic about getting involved, fucking, it terrifies me. Like what we're actually gonna get. So
no, I think I know Ender. Ender's not. He's not a troll at least. Oh come on, guys, just start adding me. It should have been unless the Skype's kind of. Delayed here. If not, if you don't want to call, go ahead and ask your questions in the stream chat, and we'll kind of ask them out loud.
There might have been some on the Reddit thread as well that looked pretty
Like,
well thought out and articulated in a fucking rare.
You want to read it?
Moment of esports clarity. Oh no, no, I didn't say they were. I said
they might have. I see.
It's your show, bro. You choose the question.
Oh man, it's all good. Let's see. Okay, so I'm gonna read out one from Fear Dragon. He says, "Unfortunately, I won't be able to watch live." What do you think some things that almost no casters are doing right now that they should be doing?
It's kind of an interesting question. No casters doing that they should be doing.
Well,
I think that that's like too strict.
Yeah.
Like, there's casters that are doing all sorts of things right, you know? Like, I would say, let me change it slightly, because there's nothing that no casters do. If I knew that, I'd be doing it, so already the thing is wrong, right?
Well, maybe the question is, like, what are some things that, I don't know, it's kind of a weird question, too, but what are some things that you do that you think that no other casters do?
Well, I wouldn't even go that far. I think that there are lots of casters that do things I do, but I would say overall, like, especially for up-and-coming casters, if you don't actually know about the game, don't fucking pretend like you actually know about the game.
Right.
It
right.
kills me when I watch a caster, like, talk shit on a pro player for something they did that was wrong. When I look at the game and I look at it, I'm like, no, based upon everything he scouted, he actually just got tricked. That was the right decision. That wrong decision he made was actually the right decision, if you're actually smart enough to see that. And, you know, that's a frustrating thing to see. So I would say really avoid acting like you know everything if you don't. And if you're going to say the player did something wrong, you better be fucking right, because that I think is a frustrating thing for pro gamers and other casters and fans and everything.
Well, I definitely get that a lot when I'm talking to them again. You know, we were talking about how like players talk about casters and stuff. One of the pet peeves of any top player is how fucking dare they say, you know, this guy who knows nothing, like how dare they say I did it wrong? You know,
it does happen.
They get so unbelievably angry about it, you know, and rightly so, I guess.
Well, I think
you should know. If you're going to say it, you need to know. You know, you need to actually know that this was actually, you know, you did mess up. Like, you made too many Colossus, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny because I think guys like you and Apollo, who, you know, who do a lot of research and, you know, obviously play the game too, put a lot of pressure on everybody else to really, you know, the classic make a call as to what you think they're going to do next, right? Mm. We see that a lot. Like, people are just having to guess or they feel like they have to, like, call that out because you guys do such a good job of it, and there's value, I guess, intrinsic value that comes with that. So so you're saying that if you don't have it, you should just, those guys just should not do it and just
say something else. Like there's a lot of things that can be said. Like, I could do a whole cast without saying what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
And I could, you know, it's like I could, but I oftentimes I have a good opinion on what they're going to do next, so I give that opinion. If I'm wrong, I'm like, oh, okay, I see why they did this. This is really smart. Okay. Right. You know, that's important. Then also the one other one, you don't have to make jokes in your cast. Sometimes I see people trying to joke, and they just like have maybe no synergy. Like, it's a new casting partner, and it just doesn't work, and it's awkward. It's like, you don't have to joke in the cast. Like,
right.
It can be a completely serious cast and still have people enjoy it. Absolutely. Yeah. So,
okay,
just
cool.
Be yourself, like Richard was saying earlier.
God,
seriously.
That's the theme of this show.
You can't
just
be yourself, man.
That's
a good, awkward fucking cast, though, when a joke goes down like a lead balloon or some shit, man.
Ain't that the truth. All right, let me pull on this caller and we'll just cross our fingers, man.
Okay, I hope this goes well. I'm scared. I might hang up real quick if he hurts my feelings.
He's not gonna hurt your feelings. Hold on, let me fix this while we got your pictures. Richard loves this picture.
Hi there.
Hey, what's up, bud?
Not too much. First and foremost, Artosis, I would just like to say I'm jealous of you. You got in on a lot of gigs in Taiwan that I wanted in on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's okay. But I'm trying to think here. What else was it? Also, I wanted to sympathize with you because 14 hours of casting a day, like I did 7 today, and that just drove me nuts. Now, let's just get right down to nitty gritty. I've got 3 questions I wrote down in a notepad.
Okay. Only 3. Wow. Okay.
Well, okay. Like, I want to be the quote unquote established English caster for the China scene. What do I do? That's question number 1. Question number 2 is, I'm going to Korea next semester to study abroad. I will graduate without coming back to America. What can I do after that if I want to become a caster? And 3, what are some resources that I can use to improve my casting? That's it.
Okay. I'm actually going to start at the back with resources to improve your casting. This is this is actually kind of an interesting one. You should find some people that you respect the opinion of and ask them what they think and really take criticism well. Tell them you want the actual criticism. Like, your feelings shouldn't be hurt when they actually are like, listen, you're saying this word too much, or I think you say too much or something like that. You need to actually really take that very well. Another thing that I personally did when I was first really coming up, I found I really liked how DJ Wheat was doing things. So I watched a ton of DJ Wheat shit and just studied gesticulation and the way that he conveyed his sentences, the way his voice moved, things like that. I also found some TV people that I really liked. I watched a lot of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert because I think they're great on camera.
Yeah.
And that's something that I tried to take lessons from. So those are just my personal, like, you find someone that you're like, you know what, I kind of like the way this person is speaking, showing themselves and stuff like that. And you just, it doesn't matter who it is because anyone on TV is already very good. So
right.
You watch some of that and study. You get some people that can give you some good tips and stuff like that. That's how I would go about it. And of course, other ways to improve, you have to practice a fucking ton. Like, there's no way around just doing a billion commentaries. It's important. But yeah, so I would do those. And also, when you start actually commentating, there's going to be a lot of negativity. So just try to siphon out the useful criticism that sounds reasonable. Like, you know what? I kind of felt like this, what this guy's saying is right. Whereas other people are like, you're terrible, go home. Like, just ignore that. Like, that always happens.
Of course.
Okay, so I'm going to jump up to the first question. You want to become the main caster over in Taiwan?
In Taiwan and China. The thing is, like, there was an event that Sen went to last week in mainland China. Nobody in America knows about it. It was sponsored by NVIDIA. It was a huge LAN.
That happens a lot, which I'm very sad about because I love watching Chinese players. But, I mean, this is something where you need to start getting your name out there a bit. Like, what you should be doing is whether don't expect to be paid for a long time, first off. Like, if that's
I'm already paid. I got Twitch revenue. So, I'm getting paid a little bit on the side, but it's nothing that I can make a living off of.
Well, no, I mean, that's wonderful because a lot of people, I just say, listen, you're not going to make money for a long time, but if you're already making some, that's fantastic. But start casting these players. Make these your players. Don't you cast a single European, unless it's like Sase because he's always over there. But know everything about the Taiwanese players. Know everything about the Chinese players. Write things for the scene. Like, write up, if a tournament's coming up, write a post for Team Liquid and Reddit where you're like, here's the stream to it. Like, you should go watch this. This is great. Here's a little blurbs about these players. Because you're going to have to build those players to build interest in those players if you want to actually commentate over there. Because the Taiwan scene and the Chinese scene are like the two most underrepresented in the English-speaking community. So it's a lot of work. That's going to be a tough fucking job to do. Because, again, you look over here and you're like, well, in that time zone, I have Korea. And those are better players. And they already people know them. But you can help to generate interest. And
of course.
Once you're actually generating interest and becoming a vital part of the scene and commentating their replays, if you can get them, anything like this, you have to start making connections to everyone out there. You need to talk to them and just kind of do your best with making those connections. Be like, look, I'd love to do this event, and don't even ask for pay. Just do it. And if it actually picks up in views at all and they're like, oh, you know what, this is actually good for our brand, to have English commentary, then you can start thinking about the next level of getting paid and things like that.
All right. What about when I go to Korea next semester? Like, I mean, that'll surely kick down the budget for a lot of Chinese events because it's obviously cheaper for me to go there from Korea than it would be from America.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you're gonna live over here and study, right?
Daegu, but not Seoul, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Busan has an international airport that has pretty cheap flights to Taiwan and to China, so that shouldn't be too big a problem. I mean, this is, again, about making those connections and showing that you are a worthwhile commentator for them because you know these players inside out. That's a valuable thing. Like, I have met commentators in other smaller scenes, like, and now that I say that, for some reason his name isn't coming in my head. I met this British commentator that knows all the British players, and I talked to him before every match that I casted at WCS UK last year, and he was their scenes caster, and like he's a valuable person to have at an event over there. And you can, it's possible to become that for that area. You just, you have to start making your connections after you show that you know the players and you're a valuable asset. You know, that's the important thing, because you can't just get it. You have to, like, do a ton of footwork.
Right. All right, buddy. Thanks for your question.
I'd like to give a huge shout out to the community. Thanks for anyone who's been supporting me. If you're not, then, you know, I mean, just great. Thanks anyway. You're right. Feeding me more.
Thanks, man.
See ya.
All right, see ya.
See ya.
No, he's actually a good guy. I actually know who he is. Yeah, it just dawned on me who I know. I actually know who he is. I'm so bad. God. All right, Laser's next. LaserX. All right, let's see.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hello. Actually, I have a question for Artosis. Will we ever see any more of GSL Off the Record or anything of the sorts? Because I really miss seeing more things of the behind the scenes of the Korean pros.
You know, I don't think we're ever going to bring back Off the Record. That's my guess and opinion. I've never asked anyone, but it's a very different esports scene out here right now. When we were doing Off the Record, the Kespa players hadn't switched over. And Off the Record was a great way for us to build some of these pros for the new StarCraft II fans that we had in the ESF, Esports Federation. Whereas now, it's split up. It's like half and half for pro gamers on both sides. And the practice regimens, because there's so many pro gamers, are like really buckled down. Kespa already is a very buckled down thing. So I doubt that we'll really see stuff like that. I know that there's some more content trying to get a little bit more behind the scenes coming out with Machinima. They actually have Jeff Lejos doing a lot of interviews with the Korean players to try to supplement that. So that's definitely something you can probably check out. I think it's on the Machinima versus YouTube or something like that. He's already done a few. But as far as like Off the Record specifically, I would be very surprised if we brought that back right now.
Okay. Well, I guess that was my only question. I would just like to give a huge shout out to Artosis, because I really like watching your stream. It's like always at 4 a.m. or something, but I always have to watch it. So, yeah. Okay.
I live in Korea. Wait,
I'm
so sorry.
You like it because it's at 4 a.m.? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Awesome.
We'll see you.
Thanks, dude.
All right.
Bye.
See ya. All right. That's a. Blowing through. So I'm trying to go in order, guys, so I'll get to you guys if you can. I mean, we'll probably do three or four more, and then we'll, depending on how long these are.
Infeza's coming.
You know Infeza?
He's one of my favorite observers.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, man. He's the Australian observer.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He observes all their events down there. He's badass.
Come on, buddy. Be cool. Well, maybe he's not here. Sometimes they wait, like, so long that they, Hold on, let me get... Oh, Promise wants to call. He was tweeting me earlier to get his question.
Hey, guys, what's
in.
Up? Can you hear me?
Hey, what's up?
Promise. All right, cool. So, Artosis, first of all, man, I'm a huge fan. I've kind of been following you as well from Brood War, and I really respect the commitment you've done to StarCraft 2 and kind of the legacy of that you've built up. And honestly, you're one of the icons right now in the StarCraft 2 community.
Thanks.
So, my question's going to be... for me, I guess it's kind of for me specifically, but for any up and coming casters that are kind of gotten some work, they've casted for some, you know, for example, I've done some IAMs, I've done some things for IPL and IGN before they kind of just pooped all over the place and went over to Blizzard. But what I want to ask is, as an up and coming caster right now, and as someone that isn't really able to get to events, but has a pretty good resume, and has some partners, for example, like SC2Links, they have some VODs of me up there as well. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be the next logical step in terms of trying to network and in terms of trying to get to the next step if you're not really able to get to, you know, an MLG or a DreamHack or something like that where you're able to physically meet the person, you know, face-to-face and get to interact with them on that kind of a level?
Well, it's kind of hard. You have to be persistent but not annoying. Which it can be a difficult thing. It's definitely much harder to break in online, whereas if you have a firm handshake and a nice smile and you're well-spoken, you meet someone in person, they just kind of like you, right? Like, That's how I got all my stuff. But I guess what you need to do is like continue on with the online stuff and just do your best. Like, I know that sounds really weird, but like, I think Nathanius is the perfect person for the upcoming casters to look towards, like, yeah. What he's been doing with, like, he did a bunch of DreamHack B streams, right? Like, he was doing the games in the group stage that, like, not many people are all that interested in, right? Most of the best games are going on to the higher casters, but there's a certain amount that's like, oh, you know what? I actually really want to see this TVP or something. So I think, like, if you can do that and always just be there and be like, you know, contact these organizations, be like, DreamHack, if I can jump on the F stream, right? Like, where you're casting games from groups that people don't even know exist. Like, if you're, like, always there, always on time, like, you're producing it as best as you possibly can, you're not causing any problems, things like that. Over time, I feel like you can, like, raise your credibility and stuff. And, I mean, look at what it's done for Nathanius, right? Because he was doing all of these things, and now he's at DreamHack this weekend.
That's funny you mention that, because I used to actually cast with Nathanius. I kind of got into casting before he did, and now all of a sudden it's like me looking up to him. I'm like, all right, Nathanius.
I mean, Nathan got a lot of love for doing casting on his stream during Pro League. You know,
he's a trooper, man. He's the guy that, like, wakes up at like 3 a.m. to cast Dream Hacks, and if you ever see his stream with webcam, he's like barely awake and has like 5 cups of coffee next to him trying to get through the games. But I guess that's what you got to do, man, if you want to live the dream.
I don't know about the part of casting over another thing, because you're kind of seeing their views, but the Dream Hack type stuff is, hey man, this is, you know, if companies are paying money to create content and you steal their views, I'm not cool with that. But
I'd get banned from Twitch as well. I don't think I want that to happen.
Yeah,
you get banned from Twitch.
But no, I mean,
you get banned from Twitch for casting at the same time as Pro League.
Well, I mean, if there's Pro League going on, and I run their video,
I don't know how this went. I never
not stealing their stream. You're just literally sitting in front of a camera just talking. You know
I can do the audio, but if I have a video, then that causes problems.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's just audio. It wasn't like video. No, it wasn't watching in the browser. No, not like that.
Okay.
That's really
all right. Bad. All right, so we're all clear on that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way to do it. Like, being there, being on time, middle of the night. You're showing your effort. It doesn't matter the time zone. You're doing it for free. You're not going overboard with bugging people and stuff. You know, someone that's, like, begging to cast is different from someone that's like, I would love to, if you have some extra games that I can go ahead and jump into. You just let me know, is there an admin or something that I can just jump to and be like, can I jump in this game or something? And, like, constant nonstop hard work will always push you forward.
It all comes down to consistency, basically.
No doubt about that. Consistency is the number one thing in esports, because there's so much content out there. If you're not consistent, you're not going to get any views. It's just never going to happen.
Okay. All right, buddy.
All right, thanks for the call, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, man. Okay, I actually got a question from just somebody typed it to me. How much do you value statistics that overall statistics that have been given to you to kind of use in your casting? And would it be cool to have like a ton of statistics at your disposal to use during your casts?
Well, statistics. This is an interesting question, because some commentators use a lot of statistics. Like Calder uses quite a few, and I think he's a very good commentator. He uses very many. I use very few, like very, very few, because anytime I see statistics, I can see like all the holes in them, because statistics are like sometimes really useful and very interesting, but sometimes they're complete fluff numbers. And I look at them like, well, these games that we're talking about are from 3 seasons ago. You know, like he didn't play any TVTs last season. These stats are no longer valid because I know that his skill set has changed. Like, it definitely can be useful, and it gives you more talking points, which I think is very important.
Yeah. What about general statistics? Like statistics on like just a large amount of KESPA games, for instance. Let's just say like you had access to all the KESPA statistics, and you came up with things like, you know, between minute 12 and 15 on this map, in this matchup, Protoss wins like 85% of the time.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. I like stats like that, like very specific stats, so that I can look at that and say, well, these are the sets of timing attacks that hit during that time, so these are going to be what Terran is scouting for or something.
Yeah,
something like that's very useful. But then sometimes you get other stats, too. I want to like just give this really brief story. In StarCraft 1, people are like, Andromeda is balanced in TVP. And I'm like, no, it's not, you idiots. So I looked, because they're just quoting the map score. And I look at it, and like 70% of the wins are from Flash. And it's like, okay, guys, do you see like how this is absolute? And all the wins from everyone are like 2 or 3 base all-ins. It's like, this is so stupid that anyone could pretend this. So you have to be very careful with the stats that you're saying, but they definitely, they certainly have their place. And if you don't over, like, rely on them as telling you, well, this guy normally beats Zerg or something, but it's like all his losses are in the last recent games and there's been a patch or something. Like, you really have to factor that in, I feel, for really top commentary.
Gotcha. Richard, throw in a question while I find another caller.
Just to add to that as well, because it's been kind of weird, because like, I don't want to say anything about casting like when people are asking the questions, because Artosis is here, and obviously he's the go-to guy for it. But, I have been a caster. I did fucking radio broadcast journalism at university and whatnot. And to pick up on the statistics thing, statistics are a tool that you use to tell a story, right? So you don't have to be a slave to them. Like, if you're just throwing in statistics all the time and back up points, you're actually being a very bad caster. If you completely eschew statistics and don't use them at all, you're probably being a bad caster, because it's about using an array of tools to kind of paint a picture, tell a story, and to provide some insight to make the commentary that you're providing interesting. So to give you an example, and this ties into the first guy who called in, the one I was afraid of, but he actually was okay. I've done a lot of sports journalism as well as esports journalism. And when you see how a TV commentator like a John Motson for football or soccer or whatever over here, how he does it, he creates these ridiculous, what they call cheat sheets. And they are unfucking real. When you actually see one in person, you won't believe it. So he's got every player on the pitch. He's got their date of birth, their like international caps, their goal scoring record. He's got 2 bullshit facts for each one. Like, his favorite color is purple. Or one time, you know, he went to a fucking Elvis concert. Or, you know, like these unbelievable array of information. And he knows he's not going to use 90% of that shit. But as the game unfolds, he picks out what's relevant to keep it flowing. If it's a dull game, you can go into the powder puff stuff. If it's a very close thing and you need to say what's going to happen next, well, let's look at the statistical basis for making a prediction. And that's when you can pull things like statistics out. So any commentator who relies on absolute fluff or absolute hardline statistics, they're actually not using all the tools that are there to be a good commentator. And I think the best commentators do have that balance. They, you know, they use both, like what Artosis is talking about. So that's me pretending.
That was
like
much better said than what I said, for sure. Listen to that. That was very well said.
That's when you get a broadcasting degree at school, right, Richard?
Right. Well, on that basis, I'm going to have a fucking nightcap.
Joe, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man.
Hey, you got a question for us?
For Artosis, that PVZ build that is game-related question. I'm sorry. But,
go for it, man. It's all good.
I love it.
The PVZ build that Last Shadow was casting, or coaching you with, that Udo, Stardate, Twilight Council, and like charge first. Well, is that good versus like Roach Hydra compositions? Because I feel like they... I'm at master level, but like the Zerd will go Roach Hydra, then transition directly to Swarm Host, and that kind of sucks versus Archon Zealot.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what would you recommend, like, transitioning?
Well, with that specific build, I think your first hit is the most important. You have to actually get in there and start dealing the damage, because if you are slow at all with it, they are going to get enough Roach Hydra that Charge Law doesn't break through the Roaches quick enough to help out with the Hydras. So Like, you actually just have to be really on the ball with hitting your warpins and hitting this at the earliest moment possible. And the thing is, I'm not even completely sold on the build yet, whether or not this is actually going to be a really good build over time, or it's just something that kind of works because people haven't seen it a whole lot. So I'm not 100% on it yet myself, but definitely it has to do with the sharpness of it and then your transition speed into Psystorm and Void Rays afterwards.
Okay, which is, I've been... Like, the Phoenix trying to get shut down by Spore Crawlers. So, like, I've actually been transitioned just trying to get it early third to, like, 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
Is that better than actually doing the push itself?
I don't think so. I think you have to push because you've already put the money into charge lots. I think you have to get in there and force... And the thing is, even with the Spore Crawlers, with the new range on the Phoenix, you can pick up drones, you can kill Overlords. There's no question. You're going to be able to use, if you're really microing the hell out of them, every single lift and kill a decent amount, and that's kind of bruising them. And then to bring your advantage forward a little bit, you're going to be moving out with the charge lots, which are a real threat that they have to make units against. And those units, what you want is for them to make the units and then either kill them or kill them because they didn't make kill some of the units or hurt them a bit because they didn't make enough units. And then they're going to have to keep on making units. And basically you're trying to get them into making a lot of units that aren't going to be good over time as you're switching compositions and, like, defending your new bases and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope that answered what you were asking.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Joe. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks.
Big fan, Artosis. Big fan.
Oh, thanks. Thanks much. Thanks, appreciate
man. Yeah, this is like... this is like a fan fest here. Okay, well, I get the next... If somebody has a question... ask Artosis what he thinks about the Korean commentators. I guess the soccer-like style commentators.
Oh, okay. I could say a lot about this, actually. That's a good question. Where do I start? First off, the Korean commentators are consummate professionals. They are so great. Like, but they're very, very different. Like, for instance, first off, the Korean commentators overall are on a higher skill level than the English-speaking commentators. Not... On a case-by-case basis, you have to go through every person, but overall, like, for instance, Go Rush, the Marine, Engine, those three are all, like, high Korean masters, which is, like, really... That's high level for a commentator, really high level, I would say. So they're all really smart. They're all ex-pros. They know their shit. They study, like, crazy. So they're, like, really well-prepared, very professional in that. But... The Korean commentary style is completely different from the English commentary style. And this is for, like, a lot of reasons. It was more professional out there earlier. Nick and I were the first people, really the only people brought out to Korea for commentary for a very long time. So we had a total of two commentators to work with, and oftentimes just one, because we were at different companies for a long time. So English commentating for StarCraft evolved far differently than Korean did, because the Koreans had a budget... They have a bunch of casters to work with very distinct roles. And not just that, they actually have writers where they actually have pages upon pages, like Richard was talking about, that have stats, they have facts about players, they have so much. And in fact, the Korean commentators get to the studio extra early and rehearse some because there are certain things that they are expected to get across. Whereas with Nick and I, you know, we basically... you know, we started working at companies that basically had no one that spoke English sometimes and or no one that spoke English low enough to translate these sheets or, you know, you have to translate a sheet like that, you have to speak perfect English and understand the game. So, like, you know, these just never came for us and we didn't have any additional commentators. It took us, like, 3.5 or 4 years of living in Korea before the third English commentator moved out here. So we never, and then by that point, it's like, well, we are a brand, we are a duo, we are not going to try to screw that up with a third person that hasn't been in this industry for, like, casting 7 years like us or whatever.
Right.
So it's a very different product. It's a very good product. It's well-refined. They're great at it. They have so much energy. They work their asses off. Nothing but props for the entire Korean commentator staff at both MBC, or both OGN and GOM TV. Like, they're top end, great professional guys.
I have to admit, I switch over to them sometimes, or I try to catch them sometimes just to.
Yeah.
Just that energy.
It's a
awesome.
Different excitement level.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even have to understand what they're saying. It's like.
Yeah, like, I you know, they do have some jokes in there and stuff. You know, it's a different style, and some people prefer it, and some people prefer what Nick and I have created, and I guess it's up to every person what they like.
Yep. All right, let's take one more.
Okay.
We got Pylor. I think Pylor was asking a lot in chat, so this is another one. Well, on your butts one. Oh boy.
Yes, I got it.
What's up, I'm man? Here. You got a okay, question?
All right, I gotta mute the stream. All right, what's up, dudes?
What's up, man?
All right, Artosis, I got a super serious question to ask you.
Okay.
Can you handle this?
Oh boy.
That's too serious for me. Yes, I think I can handle it.
I got it. You have to like glue yourself to the chair. This is how serious this question is.
I'm getting scared. I'm gonna turn my webcam right. off, man.
All right. What happens if your son becomes a League of Legends player and completely disses StarCraft 2, and he's like, StarCraft 2's for casuals.
Oh,
I'm not playing
shit.
A new game.
Well, I have a daughter, so...
it still works. Girls play that game, too. She can join, Team Siren.
Oh, that's true. Long as she's happy, then I'm happy. That's...
Oh, wow. That's not the Artosis I heard at the beginning of this, where he was like,
well,
I
was
going to die from StarCraft.
That, my true parenting is, as long as she's a happy, socially well-adjusted, and intelligent person, then I'm happy for her, whatever the fuck she wants to do. Because, you know, we have too many cases of unsupportive parents towards pro gamers and stuff. Like, I grew up through that very heavily, where they hated what I was trying to do. They didn't understand. They thought I was a loser. And here I am. Eat that, Mom. But the unsupportiveness is terrible. Like, I did not need to end up going to college or anything. You know, like, I skipped all that, and they didn't think I should. I'm just going to support her in what she wants to do, basically.
Well, speaking on that,
you think you got fucking problems, right? Imagine being 30 and your mum's still asking when you're going to fucking get a real job, right? Like, you know what I mean? Imagine that shit when, like, you go back for family meetings and she's like, I told you you should have been a plumber. You would be making a fucking fortune right now. Yeah, oh, I still get that, honestly. So,
You might also be in huge debt and have no job. That's a possibility, too. Who knows, man? There's all sorts of different paths for life. Just let's all try to be happy before we die, all right? That's what's important.
Exactly.
Well, they talked to Liquid Red, and Liquid Red's like, if there's one thing I could have did differently, he would have went to college to get a degree. Well, I mean,
maybe that is it for him. Like, seriously, that could be
it's different
for Red. Maybe that was the right choice, and he screwed that up. But, I mean, every person has to make that themselves, and I am completely happy that I followed what I wanted to do despite unsupportive parents. And all I know is that I will be supportive for help her find what she likes and then be supportive to do it.
That's a good dad.
You're a good
That's
person,
a good
Dan.
Dad.
All right, thanks,
thanks, man.
I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Peace, Hama.
Not too bad. Oh. Thanks for all the questions, guys. It's always fun having
fun ones in there.
We have the best. We have the best callers and viewers. You know, I can't. You don't have callers and viewers on your show, do you?
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
When I was a guest, like we had an influx of people. Before I joined the show full time, we had an influx of people who were being real assholes, and it's made me dead nervous every time we do a Q&A.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah,
really?
Do you not remember? Do you not remember them? Oh, wow, you got a short fucking memory. But,
well, you have to have a short memory.
True. The callers are actually human, which is amazing.
All right, there's one last question that a lot of people have been asking.
Okay.
Have you seen the final cut for Sons of StarCraft?
I have not seen the final cut. It's like they are really close, really, really close. I can't say.
Everybody's like waiting for it, man.
Oh, I know. I'm waiting to see it, but like from what I understand, it is extremely close, and hopefully, I'll get to see the final cut soon. I hope, but I have not seen it yet.
Oh my god, it's gonna be amazing when it comes.
I've
out.
Seen the
I
same
how many
trailer.
Hits
else has
be.
Seen. Yeah, I have no idea, but like it should be a lot. He is. Worked so tirelessly on this, it's actually insane. This is like years he has been following us.
They've been editing since April, right? I think they stopped filming in April, I think, right?
Yeah, the last scene was filmed then, but like they've been editing for longer than that.
Oh, okay.
Like
sure.
They've been editing a long time. Like he's actually the first event that Sons of StarCraft was filmed at before it had a name or a real direction was like BlizzCon 2009, I want to say. Like, or maybe it was 2010. I don't remember. The years are, like, washed together for me. But it was like, 09 or 10 that was, like, the first piece of footage that they got. And it's like, oh, my God, this has been going on forever.
Well, it's a good amount of time, though. You know, it's like, we'll see the complete evolution of esports with you guys. So that's pretty awesome, man. Mm. But okay, guys. Well, long show, but wrap it up. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. Dan, it's been awesome, buddy.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any shout-outs you want to do?
Yeah, of course. My sponsor, TT Esports and iBuyPower, two kick-ass sponsors. Because of them, I'm shifting more into doing exactly what I want more often, like play a lot and stream and be able to analyze and just kind of have fun with StarCraft. So that's great. So big cheers to them. I guess that's it for me. Oh, wait. One other thing. Speaking about branding.
Yep.
Tasteless has, like, a new show he calls Try Hard. He's so funny with his names. It's like, he's the best name maker.
That's really good.
Basically him failing, or sometimes succeeding, at, like, old-ass, like, Nintendo games and stuff. It's really cool. God. So you can check it out at twitch.tv/TastelessTV. It's actually really funny. I was watching him the other day, trolling him in the chat. So
when does he stream though? Like I never see that. Yeah,
he streams at Korean nighttime. So like,
it's like in the middle of the day.
That's probably not a good time for Americans. But I don't know the exact times, but he normally streams, I guess, like 6 hours from now or something like that.
Okay, it's not terrible. He's got VODs though, right? I'm gonna check out this.
Yeah, his channel has the VODs in it too.
Awesome. Richard, shout outs.
Usual stuff. I saw we had a lot of viewers this time around, like perhaps more than usual. So well done, Artosis. You're a big fucking draw. Like we didn't know that already, right? But but no. So there's been a few people saying it was the first time watching the show. And
oh, really? Okay, awesome.
I haven't been involved with Climbing Ladder for a long time, but I'm proud to be fucking involved with it because Chris puts on a great show. So to all the people who it's the first time watching it, do stick around and fucking support it because he's a tireless worker, that fella. So yeah, to all the regulars as well, good stuff. To the callers, excellent. There was some guy asking me Counter-Strike questions in the chat. Like, just don't even bother. I'm fucking done with that. It fucking sucks so much ass. Dan, first time talking to you. You're as great a guy as I expected you would be. So wish you every success and hope to see you on the road, man.
Thanks.
Awesome. My shout-outs, big shout-outs to our guest, Stan, and it's lived up to my expectations. And hopefully we can do it again sometime in the future. But keep up the great work, casting, the show, everything that you do. It's you talked about your brand's all about being genuine, just yourself, and you know, being true to all that stuff, and that's absolutely what comes across to me. So keep that up. It's awesome. And Richard, big thanks for joining, be my co-host every week.
Yeah, it's 10 to 4 in the morning here, man.
Exactly. That's commitment right there, man.
I deserve some sort of real don't apologize. I'm a fucking loser anyway. Like, what am I going to be doing at this time of night?
When
right?
are you
like,
going to get a real job, man? Jesus.
This guy
I got plumbing college tomorrow morning. That's what I'm worried about. So.
No, this guy, man. You're right. He's so self-deprecating. No, but anyways, Richard, check out his other show, Esports Heaven. I think the VODs are up, right? With the show with Apollo and Greycarn. So check that out on... What's the YouTube channel, man?
My YouTube channel.
Man, I have to plug... Dude, that's how bad it is, Dan. I have to plug his shit, okay?
Don't do that to me, man.
My God. It's like
you don't
terrible.
Even monetize the YouTube, so why the fuck would I remember it?
So they can watch it?
Cadred Clips, all one word, capital C.
Oh, my God.
Cadred and the Clips. It's on YouTube. Just fucking...
All right.
If you haven't watched it already, like... You suck anyway, but yeah, it's got Apollo on it, so you like that, right? Just find it.
God, man. You don't help yourself out, man. That's for sure. But go ahead and check that out. It's great. I caught the first half of it, so the first half was really, really good. So
how very nice of you to support me, Chris, like catching the first half. Second half was great.
It's about all the viewers, too, for watching, especially the first-timers. You know, hopefully you enjoyed it. Follow the channel if you like the show or want to be notified about the show and all the other shows I do. But the VODs will be available at youtube.com/chamanv. The first part actually is probably already available because we had that little blip, I was actually able to upload it like early. And so you guys should be able to check it out right now, and I'll upload the second part right after we go off air here. And follow us on Twitter at chamanv, at Richard_A_Lewis, and at Artosis. And I think that's going to be it. Next week we're going to have Red Eye on the show, and I might have there's actually somebody else I might have dropped by. I forgot it was Take or I can't remember. All the scheduling is getting all mixed up, man. That's what happens when you get too many shows, man. It's like they're all kind of run together. I just be like, oh fuck, can't remember. But yeah, so Red Eye for sure will be on the show. So it'd be great to have Paul back on Climbing the Ladder. And yeah, but until then, Shaman V, Richard Lewis, and Artosis. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Now the title's gonna be green.